Want to go, pretty boy?
Two minutes by yourself and you feel shame, you know, and then you get free.
The only thing better than a glass of beer is tea with Miss McGill.
And welcome to the Fourth Line Voice Podcast. My name is Darren. Thank you very much for tuning in. Episode 245 of the Big Show, some enforcer-based podcasting coming at you, brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network. How's everybody doing out there? Hump Day Wednesday. Here we go, folks, in the grind. Almost there, halfway. You know, I hope you're doing well. Thank you very much for tuning in. Have a returning guest today. Yeah, a lot of fun. Harrison Harper is back after his year in the Southern Professional Hockey League with the Fayetteville Marksmen, and he is going to regale us with the story of a season in the life of a Southern Pro Hockey League player, as well as a call up to the East Coast Hockey League in Norfolk. That was it was interesting, to say the least. I'll let Harrison tell that story. But yeah, it's a lot of fun having him back on the show. Of course, I had him back way back before he even left for this season. And of course, we covered, you know how we do it around here. We timeline the career. We talked about junior in Lethbridge and in the Maritimes, and of course, collegiate hockey and all that type of thing. But, I kind of told him, I said, well, when your year's done in pro, I want you to come back and tell the story. So here we go. And, yeah, he has decided to obviously retire and move on, away from hockey. And, he's actually, starting up his own, business. It's his own roofing business. He's been doing that out in Ontario for the last couple summers, and he is coming home back to Alberta, and, he wants to fire something up. So anybody down in Southern Alberta, if you need some roofing done, I know a guy. Yeah. Red Mile Roofing. He is, he'll be back here in October. And wants to get it off the ground. So, if anybody needs some roofing done, certainly hit him up. He is Hopsy on Twitter, as well as. But if you want to get a hold of him, I'm sure you know. Let me know, and I can get a hold of him for you, and I'll hook you guys up or whatever. But yeah, I think why not help a local boy out here starting up his business. And I think with the way he was cruising through roofs there in Ontario in the last couple of years, I think he'll be successful in this venture. So I wish him well. But to get on, I won't talk too long because Harris and I actually talked for quite a long time. It's quite the story. Yeah, not only did Harrison obviously play hockey and he's starting up his business here, but he also has a podcast as well. It's called The Project, and I was honored enough to be on it there a couple episodes ago. We tell a couple stories, and it's an interesting podcast, and the fact that, because everyone kind of look, oh, he's a hockey player, it'll be a hockey podcast, and it's not really. Yeah, he had a couple teammates on throughout the year and talked to them, but he's also had different people on in his life that away from the game. And, actually most of his episodes he doesn't really talk about hockey at all. He's just kind of, it's sort of like life events that situations that he happens to end up in. It was funny because we talked about it on the show, and I think we both kind of came up with the conclusion that it's kind of the Seinfeld of that kind of, in that vein. It's kind of a show about nothing, but, he amuses me. He's a funny guy, and, him and I actually text quite a bit, and, I mean, if somebody saw our text, it's just like nonsensical texts, and we have a laugh about that too. So, but this is a really fun episode, and he was really geared up for it, and we had set it up, and I always have a lot of fun talking to him, so I think you guys will really enjoy it. And it's a really interesting look at life in minor league hockey and what these guys go through behind the scenes. So, I'm really happy to bring it to you guys. So like I said, I'm not going to talk long. The only thing I got to say is check out my boy Alec over at the Five for Fighting podcast. Now that they're moved into the house and he's all set up and everything, he's obviously going to get more shows on the regular here. I know that's his goal. And I think he's recording tonight. So definitely, And he's got a great back catalog. Bia Lois, Rob Ray, Mike Segroy, Sean Pete, Jason Rushton, on and on. He does a great job. Also, on YouTube, Five for Fighting YouTube channel, he uploads all the East Coast League fights. He's going to do some more stuff as well. But the East Coast League was a great league last year. Like, he uploaded most of the fights from last year, and they were great. And this year is going to be really interesting as some of the teams with some of the signings. I think there's going to be a lot of fights, especially early in the year. Between that, the Federal League, and the LNAH, of course, with Curtis Swanson going back to it. And actually, on Sunday, I will talk about that, but there's a bunch of more LNAH signings. There's some dudes coming back that's going to be really interesting. I'm telling you guys, it's going to be really interesting. At least early part of the season when these guys are all, you know, in the fold and starting out and fresh, and it'll be something. I haven't actually been this excited, I can't even remember, decade that I've sort of been excited about a hockey season. And, you know, so this will be really cool coming up. I'm really looking forward to seeing how all the guys do. And Sunday I got another guest coming with some more information about signings and stuff. So, I will not say anything yet. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, so that'll be Sunday's episode. But if you happen to be on social media, like I said, check out the Five for Fighting podcast, or, well, not only his podcast, but his YouTube channel. Hit the subscribe button. We're trying to get him to 1,000 subscribers. And while you're there, bounce on over to the Fourth Line Voice, my YouTube channel. I have over 2,500 fight videos from all the leagues, NHL, WHL, minor leagues. They're all sorted. Just type in whatever league you're looking for in the search engine, and up they'll come. So, and hit the subscribe button there. I greatly appreciate that. Also, if you happen to be on social media, don't know why you do that to yourself, but I mean, we have to promote the show. But no, if you're on social media, Fourth Line Voice on Twitter as well as on Facebook, yeah, give me a follow or check out the page, scroll down, have a look. I'm always putting up like fight videos or pictures or just general shenanigans, so definitely check that out. But other than that, let's get into this, right? Nobody tuned in to listen to me yap, so... One final thing. We do this twice a week, once on Wednesday and a show on Sunday. And, yeah, if you're new to the show or you're a friend of Harrison's, thank you very much for tuning in. I hope you stick around. Check out the back catalog. I've had a lot of great guests on. John Morasti, Steve McIntyre, Joey Tedarenko, on and on. Just check out the back catalog. I think you'll find yourself entertained. And on Sunday, I usually, it's a solo episode where I howl at the moon and rant and rave about this, that, and everything else. So, and there's some old school hockey talk that, you know, and hopefully people will learn something from listening to it. But, or maybe not, or just kind of, you know, whatever. Get you fired up about something and yelling at the dashboard. But regardless, I hope you come back and check out future episodes. But all right, folks, let's get into it. Here's my interview with Harrison Harper, and we'll talk to you cats on Sunday. Thanks, everybody. All right, here we are on the Fourth Line Voice podcast with a returning guest ready to tell us all about his the adventure that is the Southern Professional Hockey League, none other than Harrison Harper. Harrison, how are you doing tonight?
Very good, Darren. Thank you so much for having me back on the show. It was a pleasure doing it last time. If I remember correctly, we did it like late night when I had been working all day. And I remember, like, I don't think I had much pep in my step that night. So happy to get back on the show, redeem myself. Because I remember, I think it was literally like my dad or someone listened to the show and he said you were half asleep and you were awful. So hopefully that's not what anyone thought this last time. But anyways... start with a clean slate, so appreciate you having me back on. How are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, well, yeah, it was tiresome. I could tell you were a little tired in the last interview, but no, you're still pretty good. I will say, for anybody that wants to listen to that, it's episode 127, and we cover Harrison's entire career from, you know, from the beginnings to the Western Hockey League to the Maritimes to college and all that stuff. And it's now you're pretty good, but you know, he was definitely tired, but now I know you're fired up. I forgot to mention Harrison also has his own podcast called The Project, and it is an interesting So before we get into your year in the Southern Pro, tell the folks about The Project and what you're doing over there and what it's all about.
Yeah, for sure. So I appreciate the plug. I got to I was playing hockey in university and youth sports up in Canada. I got involved with a podcast in university that I did for 2 years there for the school, and was always kind of interested in getting involved with making a pod. And I knew it was something that, you know, it's not really easy to do. It's hard to get one that's going to be, I mean, notable to any degree, but it was something I liked doing. And I was going to go to radio school way back in the day before when I was choosing what I was going to get into post-secondary. And I just found, like, I didn't go that route. I ended up not doing that in school. So I was like, well, at least I can fart around with podcasts and that'll be my radio fix. And then once school ended and I graduated and moved on from university, it was obviously I handed the reins to the show I started with my buddy up there. We handed it on to someone else who thankfully they're keeping that alive. And there's a couple other guys who still do that show. But I was kind of, it was during the pandemic, and it was probably like a year into the pandemic. I meant to start it way earlier, and it was just something I always wanted to do. And I got it going, and I like to do the talking part of it, but I'm not very big at editing or the social media aspects or, you know, all the hard work that you really need to be good at to have a successful show and take it seriously. Wasn't really my cup of tea. So, I mean, I got this show going. I call it the Podject because it's like a project. It didn't really have a direction, still kind of doesn't. And I know that sounds pretty vague and probably not the best description of a show you want to listen to, but we talk about everything from sports. I have guests on occasionally, do a lot of solo shows, talk about anything really, just good stories. We do some current events and just try to have fun with it. And I'm only about 65 episodes in, and looking to, as the fall comes on, you know, it's a weekly show. I say usually it is a weekly show, but it's going to be hopefully ramping it up here a bit towards the winter months and taking it a little bit more seriously into the new year. So I'd appreciate anyone listening to the show giving me a chance. Check me out on the Podject. It's available. Most places podcasts are available, Apple, Spotify anyway. So give it a check out. I'm on Instagram and at the Podject. And other than that, not really huge social media presence. You can find me on Facebook too. But yeah, appreciate you checking me out. But enough about that show, Darren. Let's get on with what we came here to do.
Well, I was going to say, before we get off that, though, I was actually a guest on the Podject. I think I'm episode 64. And then,
yeah,
I laugh, I was on the show, and then I don't think you came out with an episode for a month. And I'm like, holy shit, I sunk it. I thought I ended your show. That's how bad it did. Yeah. I'm like, I was the anchor that finally sunk the Podject.
No, you were honestly one of my best guests, because, I mean, it's nice having someone come on who's organized. You know, you don't gotta kind of catch them by the whim when they're doing what, you know, people are doing with their daily lives. So we had a really good episode. And then, yeah, it just worked out that there was a writer's strike at the show, and we didn't have anything get uploaded for like a month. And yeah, so the inconsistency of the summer months get a little carried away with work sometimes and whatnot. But like the show's going to live on, and there's definitely, you know, at least a couple episodes out a month. So give it a chance. You haven't listened to it. I can't believe I didn't give you the shout out when you were one of my just last recent guests. But yeah, Darren's been on there, a couple other good guests. So give it a listen if you have a chance anyways.
I will say the latest one with the boating adventure there, you had me on the edge of my seat at work. What is going to happen here? I won't spoil it for the people out there. You got to listen to it. It's quite the show. Well, I laugh. Like I said, I've told a bunch of people about the Podject and stuff, and I've talked to a few people about it. They're, you know, they're the same thing. They're not really sure what it's about, but I can tell you, my brother's a big listener, and he finds you very entertaining. So you know, and he's like, but I don't know why. But he amuses me. I'm not sure why, but he amuses me, was his exact quote, I believe. So yeah. But it is. It's
We'll have to take that as a good thing. Yeah, one day maybe it'll have a better direction, and we'll figure it out. But for the time being, just kind of all over the place. But it'll live on.
Yeah, it's like the Seinfeld thing, right? It's a show about nothing. It's kind of that sort of vibe.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But it's you have some interesting situations you get involved in. I always laugh because I've talked about that on this show. Like, I've talked about my Subway fucking run-ins and stuff like that and battling people at Walmart and, you know, and the joke is, like, if shit's going to happen, it'll happen to me kind of thing. Or I end up, it's not even any of my own doing. I just somehow end up stuck in the middle of, like, two other wing nuts and I end up in the middle of it or something by happenstance.
Yeah.
Some of your shows have ended that way. Like, you end up sort of getting stuck in that situation.
I find myself being that guy a lot of the time, and I definitely do try and tell, because I find those are sometimes like just the dumbest, simplest, everyday things that happen are sometimes the funniest stories to me. Oh, anyway, yeah. So I like to check those on the podcast, and there's still some good tales that, like, I don't even know if it's not like they're not safe for the pod, but it's just like, I don't even know if it's like, how do you explain what happened? And there's still a couple of those episodes that I need to bring forth, but I definitely know what you mean. Yeah, definitely. I find myself between a rock and a hard place sometimes, but definitely some interesting tales that I felt maybe that was part of the reason why I wanted to make a show. But I mean, for anyways, I'm not Joe Rogan, so definitely it's hard to make a show where you don't have no direction or anything like that. But anyways, I have fun with it, and I certainly don't make a cent off it. So it's all for good laugh, and I have a good time doing it. So, you know, it is what it is.
Well, that's what it's about, right? But yeah, like you said, though, right? It's the simplest things. And I think a lot of times, like, we don't really think about it, but people can identify with that. Like, even the one episode where I was ranting about the lady in front of me at Subway just being a douchebag and ordering fucking 102 subs and just being an idiot about it, and I'm back there just wanting my one, right? Like, you know, and it's just, yeah. And just kind of ranting about it, whatever. Oh, I ended up, somebody mentioned it on Twitter, on my account. Oh, and it ended up being this big, long thread, and, like, all these people are jumping in with their restaurant or their Subway adventures and stories, and I think people can relate to that stuff. So every once in a while when you find a relatable topic, you might be rambling just because it's something stupid that happened to you, but it's amazing, like, the world, like we said before we got going, the world's full of a lot of stupid right now, so I think people can identify with that stuff sometimes. So,
well, I've lived a pretty regular Joe life in a lot of ways, so I found that so many things that I think are actually funny are just like I can just, like, regular interactions with people at, you know, a regular job, at school, on the city train and buses and stuff like that, the streets and in a corner store. Like, I find comedy in situations like that is, like, more hilarious than half these people that are trying to be funny, especially today when you can't really be as fun. Like, they're not making the movies they were. People aren't saying the things that they were online, that if they're not an absolute crazy person. So I find sometimes the best humor I find is just literally in, like, the everyday life bullshit that we all go through. So yeah, definitely people, I find podcasters I really enjoy, I found that those are the ones I was intrigued with. So I was like, well, I definitely feel like we all have a lot of those stories. If you can find a way to talk about that, like, we all kind of go through that. So I find it definitely a way to get the listener kind of going too, because, well, that's what happens to me anyways, so try to practice what you preach anyway.
No, absolutely. And well, it's interesting, like you said, with your journey, what a segue, we'll get into your hockey here. But I mean, you know, you're from Western Canada, and you played here in the Western League. Then you go all the way out to the Maritimes to play Junior A, Miramichi, you know, and then you're in Ontario, going to university. So you've been all over Canada. And then you're down in the States playing hockey. Like, you've seen, and you're down south and stuff. And then, you know, and then, so you're sort of, you've seen quite a different demographic of people and different cultures. Even though it's the same country, Maritimes is completely different than the West. Right? So it's like,
oh, sure. Like,
yeah.
North America, even in general, I find if people were from, you know, if you're from somewhere way across the world and not an English-speaking country, like, you could probably paint North America with a pretty broad brush and think that they're pretty much, you know, very similar, like, people. But now being, especially, you know, across Canada, there's all, like, the different subcultures in Canada, and especially, as we all know, the States is much like that itself. But, you know, Canada being a lot smaller and less covered and, a lot less, you know, media attention, stories, movies about it, you know, I don't think a lot of people, especially in Canada, know how different, like, the East and West and Ontario are from different places. And Canada's so big, it's so expensive to travel around. A lot of people don't get to go around and see how different that people are in different parts of the country and what matters to them and what they get into, or, you know, what their interests are, or just how they live their lives, the industries they're involved in. So I just thought it was so fascinating. Like you said, I was very fortunate. I didn't get to play in the NHL or anything like that, but I was very fortunate enough to just have a hockey career that, you know, I played till I was 27 years old. I got to play in multiple different towns and just got to see, never got to do Europe. I would have loved to have gone over and play a season or two over in Europe, but just wasn't in my cards. But I got to see some great towns and meet some great people. And yeah, very, very fortunate for that. That's definitely the most fortunate thing I am for my hockey career. Just getting involved with the sport in general is just, you know, the people I got to meet and the places I got to go. And I know it sounds like a cliche, but, you know, especially for a guy, didn't make $1 million playing the game, but God, I got $1 million worth of memories for sure. That's, you know, definitely worth every second of it.
Yeah, no, for sure. And you're going to make $1 million roofing. I know it. That new business, yeah, is going to be money. I'm telling you. But, well, like you said, you finished university. You did go down in the Southern Pro League, and you played in Birmingham for 9 games the 1 year and 15 the next. And, you know, you kind of got going late, and then obviously the pandemic and blah, blah, blah. And I remember that's when I had you on the show and we talked about it. And at that point, you were sort of up in the air about whether you're going to play or not. And you and the girlfriend were talking about it and whatever, and you were kind of training, kind of, wow, I don't know. And I know you had talked to some teams in Europe and everything. How did the journey to, and of course you ended up playing in Fayetteville with the Marksmen in the Southern Pro League. How did that all come about, and how did you end up in Fayetteville, and really, was Birmingham even an option to go back to? Or did you like, I don't really want to, I want to go somewhere else? Take us to that. How did you come up with and end up in Fayetteville?
Yeah, so, I mean, it was early in the off season that, so that would have been, the 2021 season, played a bit in Birmingham that year, and that was the COVID season when COVID was nuts, and the spill didn't start till 26th. Boxing Day in Canada, as they call it. I find you say Boxing Day anywhere in the States, they look at you like you have 3 heads. So I always like to clarify that in case someone from the States is listening. Boxing Day was when the season started, the first day of the year, the first game of the year. And it was, I can't remember how many games they were going to play. I want to say it was like 50. I don't know. They were basically getting a full year in, I think. But it was the year there weren't many teams playing that year. There was only 5 of the 11 teams now in the spill playing. There was only like 13 coast teams out of 30, whatever they have now, 31 or 32, whatever. So there's not a lot of bodies. So, I mean, not a lot of places for all these bodies to play. So it was an absolute factory. And I got cut from Birmingham mid-season. And, like, I'd been there before, like, when the year prior when, like, you know, things were normal. And, I mean, I loved Birmingham, and I had a great time playing there. And, I mean, no love lost for playing in Birmingham. Great spot, great city. Good guys that are still there, and I loved playing there, but I just thought, like, after getting cut from there, I was like, well, I might as well try to look out some different options. And Fayetteville had been probably, I think they were the first team that called me in the off season, and it was really early, and I was almost like kind of impressed. I was like, wow, these guys are getting on it, like, these guys aren't wasting any time. Like, so I kind of was impressed by that. They had a new coach going in, Corey Melkert, who took over last season. Whom I kind of already knew from, his mother lived in, North Bay where I went to school. So I used to skate with him in the summers. We used to have like a skate up there for anyone that was, you know, still playing junior at a high level or pro or all the school guys. We had a good skate just for anyone to stay in shape. And he was in town, and he got in touch with us, and we skated with him for a summer or two when he was still playing. And so I loosely knew who he was already, like, never played with him, but, like, I knew him anyway. And when he was getting in touch with me, and, like, I kind of was saying the whole thing all summer long, like, I was humming and hawing. Like, COVID was really weird. Like, I mean, especially when I was having a girlfriend too, that, like, is back home, always makes you guys feel like when you're playing, especially one that's not coming with you down to play, like, you're always kind of like, well, am I going to go? Am I going to not go? Like, you're bouncing. That's what it was like for me anyways. So I eventually realized, like, European opportunities that I was pursuing fell through. I remember it was funny. I was working one day, and the team I was talking to was in France, the second division. And I was talking about going on to be one of their imports. And I was working one day, and I was literally on the John, like going to the wall, like taking a dump. And I'm checking Elite Prospects on the homepage, and I see that this guy got signed to this team that I'm hoping to go to. And I knew they only had one more import spot. So that was how I found out that I wasn't going there. And I was like, so I texted the coach like right away, or like my agent at the time. I texted him and messaged him. I was like, screenshot. I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm not going there. And at the time, I had this, which you should never do, what I'm about to tell you I did. I made this promise with my girlfriend at the time. I was like, because I was certain. I was like, I feel pretty good about this opportunity over in France. I mean, it's the second league, so not the best money or whatever, but, you know, it's the opportunity to go over there. So I told my girlfriend, who, like, did not want me to play, but, like, I'd kind of made it seem like I'd been done with it after the year prior. So she's looking forward to, like, you know, moving on and, you know, getting on with their lives. And then I start telling her, okay, I'm like, well, if I can play in France, I'll play. And if not, I won't play. And then, of course, the France thing fell through. And then I was like working all through September. And I mean, it was time to go to Fayetteville. If I remember correctly, it was like maybe a week and a half before, 2 weeks before that I had to be there that I signed. And my girlfriend wasn't pleased because I was my lack of communication through the whole process that made it seem like I was pretty dead set on not playing if Europe didn't work out. And sure enough, through that process, like, I kind of had the itch. I hadn't really been staying in shape, but, like, I'm the kind of guy that, like, I do like working out, like, in general anyway. So I was in decent shape. I do roofs, so, you know, I was doing physical labor all summer. I wasn't in bad shape, but, like, I usually was a big, like, huge gym guy, like wouldn't miss a day, 5 days a week. And not that made me some like superstar player, but that's how I had to feel good to play. So then this year I ended up signing, and I got there and I hadn't really trained at all. And then, I mean, I won't go too straight into the season there, but thankfully didn't feel too bad. But yeah, it was a kind of a last minute decision to go to Fayetteville. And I'm really happy I did, honestly. I'm glad I played the one more year. It was awesome. And yeah, I mean, honestly, the SP was like a league I didn't know much about, and not a lot of people do know about it. And the ones that do know about it know enough to know that it's like the fourth league in the North America, so they probably don't speak too highly of it. But I had a fucking riot. It was a great time, and I mean, I totally recommend anyone going to the SP, to be honest.
Okay, well, so now we've pissed the girlfriend off. We're kind of in shape. We're kind of not. Haven't really skated. Were you doing any skating? Like, had you skated at all?
So it was when I've been doing roofs. The only reason I ever got involved with doing roofs in the first place was it was like right before the pandemic started. I had graduated from school, I graduated from school. So that would have been like 1920. It was that summer. Like the world was like shut down, and my girlfriend, I was planning on moving back to Calgary right after university. Me and my girlfriend had a place in North Bay for my last year of school. Our plan was, we'd always talk about, was just, you know, heading out west after school. But then the pandemic happened, and we were like, okay, well, we can't really just like drive across the country right now and move. So not really an ideal time for that. So she's from Stratford. So we've been down in the Stratford area now for the last, whatever that is, 3 years or whatever. So I started roofing with my buddy then, and he kind of taught me how to do it, and there's a guy that I played with, and he's still playing to this day. I don't know if he's going to play this year either, but we were both still playing. So what we've been doing for the last, you know, several years was we'd both go away, and then we'd come home and just smash out as many roofs as we could together. And then, we ended up coming back this way, and, I mean, here we are now, both looking to probably hang them up. But that was what I did to support myself anyways, post school through the whole deal.
But so now, like you said, right, you got the irritated girlfriend at home, but you hop in the what do you call the car? What do you call the Jeep? What's it called?
Drive a 2008. I have a 2008 Dodge Dakota that I've had since I've driven. My mom got it when I was in ninth grade. I've driven it personally since I was 19, so I have brought that thing with me every destination I've played and lived with since then. So Yeah, I was back in the Dakota heading south.
Yeah, so you hop in the Dakota, you got the gear, and away we go to Fayetteville, North Carolina. What are your first impressions when you get there and you and they give you your living place, your apartment, and everything else? What's Harrison thinking of this, of his decision at this point?
Well, at this point in my life, I've been fortunate enough to do a lot of awesome drives, and I like doing road trips alone because I've had to travel a lot of places alone, so that's how I've gotten used to doing them. So I don't know why it ended up doing that. Oh, okay. Like, I remember at the time I got my first ever roofing job, like, by myself, and that was a really big deal for me, but I was just about to leave for hockey and, like, get there for training camp, and so I didn't know if I could fit it in. I wanted to spend some time with my girlfriend and the family and, you know, pack up and get ready to leave. But I snuck in a roof. I did two roofs at a campground, like these two bathroom buildings. I did two roofs. I just did them by myself for cash. And I was really fired up, just had the opportunity to do one by myself. Like, I'd worked really hard to get to the point to know how to do some roofs. And I've wanted to, you know, start doing that myself. So I was like, well, I got to get this one in. This is my first opportunity. So I smashed those out really fast, but it rained one day, and I got pushed back a day. So I don't know why, but I literally left at some hilarious hour, and I drove through the border of Buffalo. It was probably like sometime late afternoon, and then by the time I got into North Carolina, Fayetteville, it was like, I want to say it was 4 a.m. when I actually rolled in. So I was choked because I was going through like Virginia, like that, Appalachians. I wanted to see the mountains, and I was going through all this at night, so I was kind of choked. But anyway, so I roll into Fayetteville. Hard to get a really good feel for the town when you've never seen it, you don't know where you are, never been this area before. So I rolled in. Thank God my roommate was a guy that I'd played with in Birmingham, and he had signed with Fayetteville. So he's a guy from Estevan, Saskatchewan, Tanner Fraze. Good Saskatchewan boy.
There you go.
And I'd been in touch with him, former Estevan Bruin, actually, too. I think he was the captain. But anyway, not to get carried away here. He was there, so thank God. Like, I mean, I'm pretty good at meeting new guys anyways. But, it was 4 a.m. I didn't want to come kicking the door in to a random guy. But at least I knew my buddy Tanner, so it wasn't that big of a deal. We had another roommate at the time, too, but he literally was there and gone in the morning. An East Coast team picked him up. I don't even remember meeting him, honestly. It was that fast. But, yeah, we get into our living quarters, and guys that have played in this league, we always joke, like, every single apartment in the SPHL is the exact same. I swear to God, they're the exact same. They're either, maybe they're two bedrooms, maybe they're three bedrooms. Maybe you're lucky enough to get your own bathroom. But they're pretty much like just what you'd imagine, like generic apartment. You walk in, kitchen, little dining room to your left, carpet, little area that you could have your TV room. I had a three-bedroom. There was a master bedroom, which Tanner was in because it was his fourth year in the league. You get that veteran status. That's how it goes. You know, you get games played usually. Yep. That's how you figure stuff like that out. And then, so he was in the master, and then I just was in the empty room and the other side of the house, and me and the other lad had to share a bathroom. But so I get in there, and honestly, pretty much very similar setup, same sort of a apartment complex style, like living quarters with, like, you know, outdoor parking. This place had an outdoor pool, much like the places I'd lived in, other places I'd played. So it was nothing really out of character there. But then, like, I got in there at 4 a.m., and I remember we had to be there the next day at 9 a.m., and then we were going to skate at 10 a.m., and, like, I hadn't skated in a couple of weeks, so I was like, fuck. But thankfully, I don't know what happened. I can't remember if the Zamboni broke down or something with the ice plant. The ice wasn't ready, and the Zamboni was broken or something. We couldn't skate that day, and I was literally like, thank God, because I didn't have it in me. I was really tired, but anyway, so, yeah, we got there. The thing about the SP that's great, like, you don't make tons of money, but, like, your living's taken care of. You can golf for cheap, if not free. And so, like, yeah, I got there. I was in Fayetteville at 4 a.m., and after the ice got canceled, we did, like, our little introductory meeting. Like, I was on the golf course at, like, noon already with, like, my roommate, Tanner, who I knew, and then two guys whom I'd never met that were on the team. Like, you know, we already kind of being boys, and we hit the golf course. And, you know, the nice thing about the ESPY, there's no real, like, training camp. We showed up on a Friday, and we had no exhibition games, and which is beautiful. No exhibition games, and the season started Friday the next week. So we rolled in, skated for a week, and got after it. It was perfect.
There you go. Well, speaking of that, yeah, we'll just a sidetrack for a second. To go back to your, like, Lethbridge days, how annoying were exhibition games?
They were annoying. And, like, I mean, they're annoying at any point, I find, because if you're a young guy coming into all this shit, you're in there, there's a bunch of extra bodies at camp, like, you're looking at who's in the lineup, who's not in the lineup. You're, like, trying to figure out if it's a good thing if you're playing, if it's a bad thing if you're not. And then if you're an older guy, like, especially if you're playing in the Western League, like, you got to play 72-game seasons. And they're playing, like, something like, I definitely remember playing, like, 7 or 8 exhibition games. Like, just way too many. Or, like, you go to, we would do, like, it's always, like, a tournament. And when I played in Lethbridge, we'd do the tournament up in Crow's Nest Pass. We'd be playing, like, the Hitman and Kootenai at the time, the ice, and you'd just have to drive up. You go play in, like, these minor hockey barns with concrete boards, and then you got guys just finishing every check because every guy's all horned up to try and make the team. Guys are fighting, putting your head off the freaking steel posts that are on the boards because the place is a minor hockey barn, like I said. So, yeah, exhibitions were never too fondly looked at, and I mean, yeah, you might want one or two to get your feet wet, but honestly, like, I thought it was really weird hearing that the ESPY didn't have any exhibition games, but the second I heard that, I was like, thank God. Like, that's, like, I couldn't imagine what they would look like, and because the ESPY is kind of a shit show at the start anyways, because last year, it's not usually like this. Like, this SPHL started before the Coast, which made no sense because, like, I didn't go to any ECHL camp to start the year, but, like, we started our year, we had an older team in the Spill, so we didn't lose many guys, but, like, the Spill started for, like, the first weekend, and then camps in the Coast opened up the next week, so, like, you know, most SP teams, like, cripe, sometimes, like, you might lose 10 guys to Coast camps, and all these guys go, and a lot of them know they probably won't make it, but, you know, they're going to go. So then, like, I just laugh. I'm like, the ESPY, like, whoever runs the scheduling there, sometimes I laugh. I'm like, what are they thinking? So last year, we start the season, and then it was just, like, we're a week into the year, and it's war. It's like famine. There's, like, no bodies to go around because everyone's at ECHL camps. We got guys that, like, myself, been hanging off a roof from a harness by my neck for a whole summer. And all of a sudden, I'm playing 35 minutes, and I'm just like, holy shit. Welcome to the ESPY, babe. This is what a full year in the ESPY feels like, not a COVID season. Yeah, but no, it was great. It was a riot. It was a very good time. And I think I always had aspirations of, like, I mean, I think I said this multiple times already. I realized that, like, a younger age, I'm like, okay, I'm in the Western League. Even when I was in the Western League, I was okay. Like, I'm in the Western League, but, like, NHL is probably not my reality right now. I should probably start, like, thinking about, like, if I want to play, like, what's, you know, what's realistic to accomplish here for the style of player you are. And I was more of a North American style guy, like, not saying I was some heavyweight fighter, but, like, I'm a defenseman naturally. Played forward in the dub, but, like, as a D-man, like, I'm a stay-at-home D-man. I'm an off-the-glass and out guy, D-to-D, off-the-glass. Play real simple and don't get a ton of points, don't score a lot of goals, and, like, kind of hard to sell yourself over to Europe with that. Like, yeah, you could be a stay-at-home defenseman with not great offensive numbers, or maybe you're just shit. Like, it's very easy if you're a big body Canadian guy putting up good numbers. You know, they probably have a good idea that you're going to come over and be able to play. So I always found, I was like, the ECHL is, like, where I want to be at. That's, like, the level I think that I could play at and, you know, be not, like, you know, be a the player that I've always been, just play that shutdown role, you know, not a power play guy, but, you know, just play that solid, you know, top, maybe that's a top four, maybe that's bottom pair, you know, whatever the team needs kind of thing role. That was always my plan. And then I don't want to make excuses with COVID and stuff like that, but, like, the way COVID rolled out and the way I went into the Spill and I had a couple seasons under my belt now, like, I don't know, it just kind of didn't work out for me in that regard. I got no regrets, but it's just what happened to me, and I ended up being an SP guy, and I mean, I had no problem with it. It is a really good level of hockey still. Like, maybe not as, I found even that, like, I played one game in the ECHL this year, and I'll have to tell you a bit about that, because, like, that could be a podcast episode.
We're getting there. We're getting there, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a good level, and, like, to touch on to what you mentioned earlier about how I've been able to play in Alberta, New Brunswick, Ontario, and now in the States, and I might have mentioned this probably on our last episode that I was on with you. The one thing I have just noticed is, like, you know, hockey's not the most popular sport in the world by any means, but, I mean, just playing in all these different places I've played, like, it just fascinates me how many good hockey players are actually out there. Like, especially you come to the SPHL level, and I always found this so funny to me. Like, people, and for anyone listening to this, like, this isn't me, like, dissing the SPHL at all. This is me, like, giving an honest, like, representation of how it was looked at in my life growing up. Like, I know a lot of people that even play in the SPHL, and until they're done school and it becomes an option, like, they don't even know what it is. But I was, like, always a elite prospect, hockey DB, like, nerd hero going up through, like, grade school because, you know, we did do a lot of stuff on the computers, and I found these sites, and I'd always be looking at, you know, stats and all this bullshit online. So I knew what the SPHL was for a long time. And it was always kind of something that we laughed. Like, we'd make jokes, like, and, like, especially, you know, it's the same thing when you play Major Junior. Like, when you're in Major Junior, like, guys look down upon playing youth sports hockey. Like, it's a joke. It'd be like, if a guy's not taking it seriously or if he has a bad game, he'll be like, "Putty, you keep playing like that, like, you're looking at youth sports here." Like, that's just the way it's talked. It's like a joke. But it was always like that growing up. People would make those jokes about the SP all the time. Be like, oh, like, people would call it the Stop Playing Hockey League. Or what, the Stop Playing Hockey League, or one of the funniest ones I always heard was the Supportive Parent Hockey League. Because you ain't making much money, so your parents must be helping you out a bit to play in that one. And it is definitely true to a degree. But so I always had this negative connotation. I'd always be like, I ain't playing in the Spill, it's like the coast, or I'm hanging them up. And then sure enough, ended up in the Spill and just blown away by the amount of good players that are still down there, because I knew nothing about, like, D3 hockey, or really even the NCAA for that matter, but I knew NCAA players, like D1, I knew that they were obviously high caliber and really good, played a couple exhibition games against D1 teams that were nasty, so I'm like, these guys are gross. But then, like, I knew nothing about D3 schools. And then I was like, man, the kids that are coming from D3, like, these guys are gross. And then I was like, then there's, like, Europeans that are, for some reason, sometimes sprinkled down in the Spill, too. And they're coming from, like, God knows where. And I'm like, these guys are gross. I just can't believe, like, how many people are good players. And, like, the Spill is, it might not have as much top-end skill as even, like, the ECHL, what obviously doesn't. It's a league lower. But these are good players. And I found the thing I liked about the SP just plays such a true North American game. Like, a lot of dump and chase, but just, like, just pure North American style. Like, even it's almost like it's a couple years behind because, like, you know, the way that these upper leagues are going now, you know, NHL and a lot of these other leagues included, like, the way they're playing now, like, I watch the game, and I'm just like, I know we, like, obviously, especially this show here, like, we like to talk about, you know, favoring all, you know, a lot of fighting and shit like that. Like, that's obviously absent. We don't even need to touch on that. But just the way that these guys are playing the team, like, playing the game now, the systems and the skill that is now in the game, like, I watch it, and I was an active player, too, a year ago. I'd just be like, this is fucking insane. So, like, the Spill was a little more old school in the way that they'd get the guys to play. I know it's, you know, a little lower level of the league in North America, so that might make sense. But I really liked the way they played. And one thing I started to really like, too, was just, like, honestly, the guys that play in it. Because the guys that play in it, they've played probably, you know, they've all cut. If you're playing in the Spill, like, you kind of have a slice of humble pie. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, you know, some guys don't for sure, but I found even in the ECHL, like, guys can play in the ECHL at my age, just even being there, not even being a great player, and they could think that they're pretty, they might as well be Austin Matthews, the way they like perceive themselves sometimes is the vibes I've getting too. So like, I just found a lot of the SB guys were really down to earth. I think they like realized that like, you know, no one's here is making $1 million. Like everyone there is playing because they love the game. They love the lifestyle. They love the talent that they get to play in. And honestly, like the SB, they were treated so well. I mean, very limited East Coast experience, but like basically for the most part right now, like high level sports in general, from frickin' high school now to the NHL, like they all kind of the game day operation, like the way their players are treated and stuff like now on game days and at practices and with all the nice facilities, like I've seen high school facilities with nicer rooms than like the Calgary Flames. I'm sure you saw that video when they're showing them around Kenzie Weegar, everyone's going nuts about that. But it's true. So like in the ESPY, like you're getting treated just as well as, I mean, and that people could be laughing at me hearing me say that because I never played at like some of these nasty spots, but like you're getting treated very well. And I honestly speak very highly about the league because anyone that wouldn't speak highly of it is talking of just from the fact that it's, you know, it is a fourth league in North America. But if they're talking negatively about it, there's a good chance they know nothing about it. Because I can be honest, I didn't know anything about it, and it was just, like, funny to joke about, you know. But, no, it's great league and great time, and they still play a little rough down there, thank God. There's no fight restrictions like the East Coast League. So they still got that going for them. And I think, I don't know, you know, I look back at all these leagues that you've gotten me to come in touch with through your like accounts and on Facebook and whatnot. And I just hope that this league just, you know, lasts and keeps going for a long time because it's an, if I was a single guy and like I didn't have, you know, other interests, I was, you know, looking to pursue, I honestly, if I could make it work, I would play in the spill till I wasn't able to put my feet over the boards and take a shift.
No.
To be honest.
And it's interesting, like, some of the guys that can do that, right? Either they've, you know, like you said, the parents have come up with some cash or their spouse has got money or whatever. They were lucky enough to find themselves a doctor, so they're good. Or a lawyer or something, you know, so they can play until they can't go over the boards anymore. I was going to say, with just kind of looking at the Fayetteville roster and stuff, and you had kind of talked about it, you mentioned it briefly. I was actually surprised with the age of that Fayetteville team. You had a lot of older guys on that team for a Southern Pro team. It seemed anyway.
Well, I think for any pro team, probably.
Well, but yeah.
I found the spill too. I find like it's, I don't understand it. It's a very unique league because there's multiple stops in that league that if you look, they have guys that have played there for 6-7 straight years.
Yeah.
And like, you don't even get that in any league. Really. So when you see that, I'm like, they're being treated to a degree that they ain't leaving. And like, if they weren't being treated well, like, I don't think they're playing 7 straight years there. So, I mean, something's adding up. And yeah, like, honestly, it's just they do a really good job, and it's only an 11 team league, but it's, you're not making tons of money, but if you can find a way, I don't know. Especially nowadays, like, me and the guys would always joke, like what if we just got real into crypto and just turned this into an investment firm and just worked for, like, the next, just played here for the next 10 years? Like, who cares? Like, you could probably swing it, to be honest.
Well, and I was going to say, though, and especially, like, well, I guess probably every team has one of these guys, but, like, down there, like you said, you got some older guys that maybe been in the league for a few years, or the guy that's been on the team for, like, you know, 4, 5, 6 years. Like, those dudes got the hookups, though. Like, they know where to go in town, and they got, go here, forget your tires, you know, or the oil change, this guy will do it for you. I know a guy, you know, that can get it for you at a price. Every dressing room's got to have that guy.
Oh, for sure. Or, like, one thing, like, not you, like, even if you, guys were definitely great to, like, I don't know, I remember, like, show you around, like, especially, like, I don't know, when I first came into pro, like, you needed a guy like that to, because you got per diem, and then your SPHL, you know, you got a find out how to bargain and stuff like that. You know what I mean? You got to find out how to budget so that, you know, yeah, you definitely be talking to an older guy if he telling you hilarious stuff like that. But what the fuck was I even going to just say? I just had to, I had to tip my tongue there.
Well, how much? What, how much was the? How much was per diem for you guys?
Per diem was we got, and I believe this was both spots I played. I want to say that, like, so we'd go away for like a 3-3, say like that. We're playing Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They'd give you a per diem for like, I think it was $25 a day is what I want to say it was. And you, and like when I played in school and in junior, you know, like you go to Boston Pizza after the game, or you stop there before the game, or they get pizza on the bus, or they all get you subs. Like the SB, like you don't do any of that. Like you're on your own. Like you got to go eat what you got to eat. And then like, you know, some guys you'd see were smart enough. You'd look over at a guy, certain road trip, you'd see him like, you know, maybe he's making some pasta and coming home, and it'd be a guy that you would see that would usually be getting Chipotle on the road. And you'd see that, and then, especially when I was like a first-year guy, like didn't know the roadies well yet, I'd be like, oh, shit. I'd be like, there's a reason why this guy's not just going to Chipotle today. And then you find out that you're stopping at the Love's truck stop and you're eating, you're eating churros before the game. Like, there's a lot of learning curves when you're playing in minor pro hockey like that. So, like, they don't teach you that. They don't talk about that. So I found, like, stuff like that was fucking hilarious. Like, just, so, yeah, definitely, just go, we were lucky to have a little bit of a group of older guys. And I'm not old. I'm a 94. But I find, like, the 96 and up to, like, above the mind, I feel like we're all kind of on the same page. Like, I mean, even we played junior like 10 years ago, and a lot's changed in 10 years, and the world, and especially hockey itself as well. So I just found it was really nice playing with a little bit of an older squad, for sure. Not to double back to your other question there, but...
But, like, yeah, so, like, say you're playing, you're on the road, you're playing in Peoria or whatever. Once the game's done... Like, there's no fucking, like, spread or anything for you guys. Like, you got to go out in the night and find some food.
Actually, now that you say that, I'm an idiot. I forgot. So, when you play on the road, I remember when I had a brain, I actually had a mental collapse a minute ago. I remember what I was trying to say. Every team has a booster club in the Southern League.
Yep.
They all have booster clubs. So, when you play on the road, so, like, say you play in Knoxville, the booster club for Knoxville prepares Fayetteville a little, like a little meal. They have it like on a table for you usually when you leave, or like when you went to Macon, their booster club did like a buffet, and you'd go into this dining hall, and you'd literally line up like, and then both teams would be in there like eating after a game, and I'd be like, this, it was so weird. Like I remember one time this season. It was pretty greasy, kind of cheap on my part, but there was this guy on Macon that was like, you know, a guy that likes to take the body, and he hit my roommate, and I didn't like it, and I usually don't do this, but I just went and like hit the eject on the mitts, and we both, like, nothing even really happened. Like, I wouldn't even call it a fight. We both got kicked out of the game, I think. Or no, I got kicked out of the game for jumping the guy. I got a 5-minute major. I don't know why. In like the process of me grabbing him, I think I pushed him into my roommate. Like I don't even know if I punched him. Somehow his nose like was bleeding, and it looked really bad. Like for someone who didn't really see what happened, it probably looked like I came in there like Kingdom Come and just drilled him. But I didn't even really. But then after the game, like we're having buffet style dinner, like together in the room after, and I was just laughing. I was like, could you imagine if this was like in the 80s and they had this set up? I was like, I could see like something going awry very fast. Luckily, the boys are pretty tame these days. They don't have any food fights going in the Macon Coliseum post-game after the meal.
Yeah, that shit wouldn't have been going down in the 90s or the 80s, I could tell you that. There'd be no serving the meal to the same team at the same time. That wouldn't happen, I don't think, because that would just end up in Macon.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so, yeah. So that was funny to me, but yeah, so you did get meals on the road after the game, like if you were hopping on the bus and leaving or going back to your hotel. But other than that, like you're on your own for breakfast and pregame, and you know, if you wanted snacks obviously at night and stuff like that, you're on your own. But yeah, I mean, the nice thing, I just like playing at that, especially that older, once you finally get out of school, like, school was fun because, you know, we'd have our road trips and stuff. But because it was university, it was so annoying. Like, you'd be 25 years old in Montreal playing the next night, and if you wanted to go get a beer, like, someone's getting mad at you because you're technically on a school trip. And, like, yeah, they're not even mad at you. They're just like, because we're here with the university, they'd get mad at us because they'd be like, I just can't hear this shit about you guys getting in anywhere drinking. So it'd be a hassle. You'd be like 25 years old, and the guys, people are telling you you can't have a beer at a restaurant with your dinner. I'd be like, this is absurd. So the thing I loved about the SC, like, not a huge booze hound or anything like that, but, like, you know, we'd be playing in Quad City or some hilarious town I've never been in and can't sleep. Like, I'd walk down the street and, like, go to a hilarious bar and just, like, grab one or two by myself and just relax before the night. So, yeah, it was a great time.
Well, speaking of the, like you said, so you're on the road. What was your, you had to have had, was there any fucking, like, you know, bus driver got sick, player had to drive, bus wasn't running. Did you have any crazy bus stories?
Yeah, I had one really good bus story, actually. So our bus driver, his name was Kenny. And so we had a sleeper bus, and I know everyone knows that, but, like, for anyone that for some reason wouldn't know what that meant, our bus just looked exactly what you'd imagine, like, a bus for a band on a tour would look like. Other than, like, the bunk bed situation. But, like, the front of it was set up just like a tour bus for a band. And anyways, we had this guy named Kenny, and he was a bus driver, and he was a former Marine, and he was an absolute beauty. And he smoked, like, so much that, like, when he talked, like, you know, it just sounded like he was, like, talking through, like, a carburetor. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You could tell when someone's a heavy smoker.
Like, he
this
gravel.
Guy certainly yeah. was. Yeah, he sounded like he was just chewing on gravel at all times. And he smoked, I can still remember them, like the Hollywood, the Marlboro, like, are they Hollywood? They're Marlboro Golds. That's what they were, Marlboro Golds. I can still see them. He'd have a whole carton on the dashboard whenever we'd walk in. And, like, this bus wasn't too old, but, like, had to have been at least 10, 15 years old because it just had that. It had that vibe that, like, the cigarette carton being on that dashboard didn't look out of place. Like, it looked like it was supposed to be there.
Tremendous.
And this guy, like, he was our bus driver, I think, every trip we had almost. And I don't know if I remember this at the first couple trips, but all of a sudden, we're going on the road and we're on our way home, and I'm going to take a piss at night. And I'm like, do I smell fucking cigarettes? And I'm like, I smell cigarettes. And, like, it was pretty quiet up there. Like, I don't remember if we won or if it was a long enough trip that it kind of died down. But I walked up there. Like, I have always, like, I love bus drivers. Like, I always found some guys were kind of dicks to the bus drivers and didn't give them time of day. And I just always felt so bad for them because they're alone, right? And if no one gives them the time of day, like, they're surrounded by people all day, and if no one's nice to them, like, fuck, that can make for a long day, and, like, they're the ones carting us around. So I've always had a huge, huge soft spot for bus drivers, and I've always been really nice to them, and I love talking to them and making sure they're not, like, lonely on the road, you know, because I'm sure I've played on teams where a lot of people aren't too, you know, they're not giving the bus driver much time of day, not being rude to them, but giving them the time of day. So I was already, like, his name's Kenny, and I'd always... Hey, Kenny, how you doing? Whenever I'd seen him, I'd be asking him random questions about the bus and shit. So I had no problem. He had this curtain that he'd draw. He could, like, pull it across so we couldn't see up there and he couldn't see back there if we had the tunes going or something like that or lights on. So I just pull the curtain back, and I'm like, I'm going to tell him, like, I smell cigarette smoke. Basically being like, or, like, I'm investigating. And then sure enough, Kenny's just ripping darts in the front seat of the bus there. And then so I see this happen one time, and we would always buy a bunch of beers on the bus, and it was not a bunch of beer. I shouldn't say that. Maybe you should edit that out. I'm joking. But especially nowadays, I feel like a pussy for even saying that. But we would, if we, like, played, like, usually if we had a long road trip home, we'd be able to get beers. And I don't know how it happened. Like, can't remember if we even won or lost, but I ended up getting a case of beer. And the best part about our bus was it had, so, like, the staircase would go up. You know what any bus looks like. You take the stairs up. But this bus had a little flip-out seat that was in the stairway. And so I found out about this, and we're leaving Birmingham, And so one of our trainers used to like sit there when the bus would be pulling into like ranks, or maybe for the first 10 minutes when we'd be leaving somewhere. And so like I kind of found out about this seat. And then one day when we were leaving Birmingham, just picked up our beers. I just sat in that cockpit seat and I just drank beer it was a 9-hour drive from Birmingham to Fayetteville. And I sat there, drank beer, and smoked Hollywood Golds with Kenny, our bus driver, as he told me stories about being in the Marines and told me his views on politics basically the whole way home. I remember we pulled in at 8 a.m. and the sun was up, and I hadn't gone to bed yet after our game, and I remember just being like, this is awesome. And I was like, this is why I came down here.
That's tremendous. Yeah. Kenny, I hope you're listening to this. That's tremendous.
I hope he is listening to this. I think he used to be a bus driver in the East Coast League too. Long time bus driver. Like, that guy made me laugh though. Like, some bus drivers, they love hockey and they don't miss a game, and they can tell you great stories about players they've seen or hilarious shit. Kenny was like the guy that wouldn't even come in the rink. So God bless Kenny. He was a rock star. Like, he'd come out and he'd just be like leaning against the light pole in the parking lot, just smoking cigarettes, waiting for the game to be over and the boys get in the bus, and he'd shut the door and we'd be on our way.
There you go. Of your journey around the Southern Pro League, I'm going to put you on the spot here. What was your favorite place to play in, and what was the shittiest place to play in?
That's the thing about the SB. A lot of nice barns. There are some shit barns, though, too. I was lucky enough because the SB's weird. Like, some guys have, like, never... Like, some guys can play 3 years in the league and might not have been to every barn in the league yet. It's very odd how it can work out sometimes. Like, last year, it's an 11-team league. We didn't even play Vermilion County, the new team, once.
Really?
So, kind of weird. I think that might have just been because of COVID for a couple of years, probably impacted that. But I think next year they're changing that. But I've been lucky to go. I've been to every barn except Vermilion County, which I heard is dog meat, and I heard it's nothing to speak of. And sorry if you're a Vermilion County fan or from Vermilion County, but I've seen some pictures too. It doesn't look great. But no, the SD actually has some really good barns, and I gotta say that. Huntsville's probably the nicest. Huntsville's really nice, like, and that's also where they have their there's a Div 1 team down there, Alabama Huntsville. I don't know if they folded, if they came back, but they share the rink with them. But it's weird, that town, they don't give a shit about the D1 hockey team. Like, they just get crickets, no fans at all. But then in Huntsville, like, the place is pretty sweet, actually. It's I don't know how many would hold, probably like 8,000-9,000 maybe, but it's beautiful barn. Peoria is sick, obviously. Peoria being an AHL legendary AHL team for years, I always laugh that they're even an SP team, because I hear the Rivermen and I see the logo, and I remember the first time I played them, I was like, this just feels so off being in the SPHL playing the Peoria Rivermen right now.
Tony Twist jersey retired there. Yeah,
I was just. You took the words out of my mouth. I was just going to say that for you. I remember skating out there. That was the first thing I noticed, the beautiful number 6 up there on the wall. Yeah, pretty sweet spot. Evansville, Ford Center, it's honestly like an NHL arena. It's almost like, it's so nice that, like, honestly, it's probably the nicest barn in the league almost, but it's almost like it's too nice because, like, they have, like, I remember when I played there, they had 2,200 fans. It was like playing at the Saddle Dome. With 2,200 fans. So, like, it was cool. Great barn, but I was like, it's kind of lonely when you're playing in front of that many people in that big of a spot. And, I mean, there's a couple other nice ones too. Like, Fayetteville's actually really nice. Big barn, late 90s barn, but like holds 9,000. Maybe a little big for Fayetteville and their hockey market. Fayetteville, we got good fans. It just wasn't the same as, if it would have been like, we'd get 3,000 people, but that feels a lot crazier than it in a 3,000 seat barn than it does in the Crown, that's for sure, with 9,000. That's why I like Birmingham, honestly. Birmingham, it's not like the most beautiful rink if you'd ever seen it, the Pelham Civic Center, but it's the right size for that league. and it only holds about like 4,100, 4,200 if it's sold out. So even if you have 3,000, 3,500 in there, it looks jammed. It's loud, and they got great fans in Birmingham. And again, they do have great fans. A lot of these teams do, but I think it almost makes it seem like they have such great fans even more so just because of their barn, and it just brings a sick atmosphere. But then there's places, like, I'll be honest, like Macon in Georgia, like that place, oh my God, that place is horrific. It's like, it's really old, and not even really old probably, but I'm assuming it was probably not made to be a hockey rink. It looks like an arena football rink or something like that. It's brutal. When I played there this past year especially, they weren't very good, and they had not a lot of fans, so just be like absolute no atmosphere in there. They weren't very good, and then the only problem with the SP sometimes is, like, I don't know what the deal is with scheduling last year. Like, we played Roanoke 17 times out of a 56-game schedule, and we played Macon 14 times. So I didn't love that rink to begin with, but I definitely got a distaste in my mouth after playing at it so many times last year. And then, honestly, yeah, they're all pretty good, but Macon's not the greatest. I mean, I'm sure there's one or two I'm forgetting in there, but no, the SPHL is actually, they got pretty good facilities across the board, it seems like, for the most part.
Well, and I was going to say, though, and then you go to Quad Cities for the playoffs, and you're getting chirped in the crowd with signs, I'll tell you. The project was getting knocked.
Yeah, that was awesome. I don't know. That was one of your buddies, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I'm glad you said Quad City. Honorable mention for one of the nicest barns. That barn is sick, too. A long-time ECHL arena and other pro leagues. But it was – I was playing down there, and we played there in the playoffs, and it was game one, and I'm warming up. And, yeah, some guy's in the stands, and he had a camera on his neck. But he didn't have, like, a poster, but he had a little sign, and it was like – you know that, like, the greater than symbol? It was like fourth line voice greater than the project. And I was just like, what the fuck? Like, especially when you have a show that not many people probably listen to, just seeing that anywhere, especially when you're in a town you've never been in, is pretty funny. I got a good laugh out of that.
Yeah. No, my boy Jay, he's been on the show a couple times, and he was telling me, he texted me, he's like, yeah, he goes, yeah, the playoffs, yeah, he goes, Harper and fucking Fayetteville, who were playing in the first round, he goes, I'm going to make a sign up and stick it, because I think he sits right along the boards, and he's like, yeah, he'll see it for sure, and I'll take a picture of his reaction, you know, and I was like, okay, and then, yeah, he sent them to me that night, he's like, and then he had the picture of you looking at it, like, what the fuck, laughing, and then, yeah, so that was pretty funny, yeah, and then you text me after the game, you're like, what the fuck was that, you know, like...
Well, it was in warm-ups when I noticed. I should have went and batted on the glass. I wanted someone to get a picture of me and him, like, just because I don't remember if I went up to the glass and, like, gave a thumbs up pic and we took one together, but I definitely wanted one. So you got to reach out to your buddy and tell him thanks for that, because I got a good laugh out of that.
Yeah, he'll dig it. Was there any, I mean, I guess it's well, at that time, I guess it's 2021, 22. So, I mean, I don't think anybody's charging into the crowd anymore swinging sticks. But did you guys have any battles with some crowds at all? Was there any slap shot incidents?
No, but, like, I found, like, especially playing at that level where I didn't think, like, I didn't think you'd get in as much trouble being rude back to the fans. So, like, yeah, we, like, a lot of the places, the guys would, like, chirp you and stuff like that. And, like, I remember Knoxville was one that was always fucking hilarious to play at, because Knoxville, like, not the most beautiful barn, but really, really old. Like, it's so old school and it's so sick. But for some reason, for the period, not for the start of the game, you got to come out to their Zamboni gate and you got to, like, walk around. And they have, like, section that's like, it's like built right up along the glass, and there's this one part that's like tables and chairs to sit and stuff. And anyways, we like have to walk like right through it to get to and from the ice. And like, I just remember, like, these guys must have had season tickets, because I'd always see them and they'd always be there, and it would just make me laugh, because like, they're, you know, like, I love hecklers, you know what I mean? Like, I love that, and, like, I'm down to, like, chirp back and stuff, and I think that's hilarious. But what I always, like, you can tell when a guy is, like, yeah, he's heckling, but, like, he's not joking. Like, just the, you know what I mean? Like, you look at a guy and you're like, this guy's vindictive. Like, he's not doing it to, like, have a good time. You know what I mean? Like, there's, like, intent behind what he's saying. Like, he thinks he's, like, saying shit that's going to hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
And, like, when you identify someone like that, like, that would piss someone off. Like, that made me, like, almost extremely happy. Because I was like, this is fucking hilarious. And so, yeah, like, nothing crazy. Like, you're not fucking walking off swinging your stick at the guy like you wish you could in some stances, but I'm sure, and they obviously did back in the day, but like, I don't know, like, I remember one time I was yelling at this guy. Like, I've always gotten this debate with people, and I never thought this way as a kid, and like, this is, I guess, a quick sub tangent before I go on to what I said, but like, I always had buddies that would be like, is it weird if, like, say you're, like, someone, like, a parent's age, and, like, you're wearing, like, an NHL, like, so say if you, Darren, are wearing Connor McDavid's jersey, like, is that weird? Because you're wearing a 24-year-old's jersey, and you're however age, X age you are. Yeah. Is that weird that you're wearing, like, someone's, like, so that'd be, like, is it, when I'm an adult, is it going to be weird if I wear, like, my son's favorite player's jersey? Like, some people would laugh at that and say that that's absolutely ridiculous and stuff like that, but, like, I kind of agree with that to an extent. Like, I'm not going to go, I'm 28, but I'm not going to go buy, like, a Connor Bedard jersey if he gets drafted first round of the Leafs or something like that. You know what I mean? But people are like that. And anyway, so this guy was, like, always, I noticed, like, as we played him, he'd be, like, decked out in, like, different guys' like jerseys, because all these SP teams live for jersey auctions. They wear 47 different jerseys a year and sell them off. SpongeBob night and all the nine yards. You, anything you can think of, they made a jersey out of it, sold it.
Well, that's one thing I've always liked about the minors, right? It's always about the hustle down there. I hate when NHL teams do that shit. Oh, I hate when NHL teams go carny. That bugs the shit out of me. But I love it when minor league teams go carny, because they need to, and I love
it. No, I think they need to. It's like the beauty of it. That's why, like, we get so rattled when people that love, I guess we'll say, hockey purist, if that sounds like a douche term, but that's why people, like, get so rattled when they see the fucking storm surge and shit like that going on in the NHL. But anyways, yeah, so they sell a million of these jerseys, and this guy, he had multiple of them, and, like, I thought it was pretty funny, and so he's yelling at us, and it was always, like, something brutal, like, go home, like, you're poor, like, take your $200 a week, and shove it up your ass and fuck off and shit. And then, like, he said something about that, about the $200 a week once, and I remember I was like, I think I was like, buddy, you're like 57 years old wearing a 26-year-old's jersey who makes $200 a week, and you're fucking screaming at his opponent who makes the same amount of money right now. And, like, I remember he just kind of shut up, and it was pretty funny. And then, like, a couple guys were like, literally like, okay, like, our bus is right around back, like, right there, we're gonna go shower, like, fucking see you back there. And, like, of course, like, nothing actually ever happened, and not, like, even if they fucking went around, I'm sure the boys wouldn't have done anything anyways. But no, that was a long way to tell a bad story. But no, yeah, people would get into it. Like, I remember Roanoke was always fun in Virginia, just like, but it's always fun, like, especially in the minor leagues too, because, like, fans, like, when they chirp, like, they're fucking, they're kind of trying to be hurtful. Like, I used to be the bat boy for a single A independent league baseball team, pro team in Calgary. And I used to sit right at the top of the steps, and, like, the guys would be in the on deck circle, and, like, that was minor baseball. Same thing, basically. Probably very similar to the level I was playing in the SPHL, the level that I was the bat boy at. But the shit that these fans would be saying to these guys about, like, how they're poor and, like, they don't meet, they're fucking brutal, and they just, like, the shit that, and there was no different. It made me laugh. Like, I was like, I seen it as a bat boy, and I was like, fuck, 20 years later, not much has changed. The fans are still wild as ever. But, like, that's just common to me. I love that. Yeah, the fans still get right into it. And that's one thing about the SPHL. Like, and I say this with, like, I mean this in a good way. Like, in some ways, like, they're not traditional hockey markets, so a lot of them are, like, new fans. So, like, I don't know. Like, sometimes people have that, like, like they have that fire in their eye when they're talking to you. They're like, okay, like you still think you'll make the big leagues? And you're kind of like laughing and being like, no, like that, no, I don't. But like, it's just funny that like they even have the passion in their eyes, like they view the hockey at like that high of a level, which is great. And I'm not, again, I'm not fucking chirping the league or anything like that, but I'm just saying like they're not in traditional hockey markets. And these people are just so happy to have teams, and the fans are great. And a lot of people would love taking you out for beers. I had people taking me out to shoot guns in Fayetteville and stuff. Like, you can have a really good time down there. And that's just, like, the beauty of minor league hockey.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and it was funny. Like, even when I had you on and I had mentioned it, and I can't – what did we do? No, it was when I was on the project. I was going to say, somebody I just talked about you recently. It was when I was on the project, and I had put it on my Facebook page or whatever, and I had mentioned you, and I think I had a fight picture of you up there or something. Yeah, like, the response to it was – you know, was, I mean, we're not saying we were trending on Twitter or anything, but I mean, you know, there was a bunch of comments and it was a bunch of people from Fayetteville that were fans of the Marksman. And they were, oh, I hope you come back. And, oh, I know what it was. It was the picture when you were doing the auction. You were the auctioneer. And underneath, I was just reading the comments and there was people that were like, oh, you were great. And, you know, whatever, Judy says hi. And, oh, I hope you come back, Harris. And, like, you had all these people. And I was just thinking, like, that's so cool, right? Like, just that, because I think it's a much more personal level, too. I mean, you know, I mean, with the NHL and stuff, you're not getting close to these guys and stuff like that. Whereas down there, like you said, the booster clubs are making food for the other team and shit like that. Like, and their people are buying jerseys left and right. There's that connection that you have with the fans.
Oh, and I took full advantage of that. I thought it was like a lot of guys, some guys like to, you know, kind of keep a low profile and, you know, keep it low key. But like, I really tried to jump into like the community of being a Fayetteville marksman because it wasn't, sometimes I'll be honest, it got annoying. But after every home game, we would usually do a 45-minute like skate with the fans. And, you know, a lot of guys didn't love it. It would drive a lot of guys crazy. But I never minded doing it because there was a surprising lot of kids that would show up. And I just remembered being their age. And I was like, how much I would appreciate like a guy like spending some time after a game or just how cool I would think it was to be able to go on the ice and rip around with players. So I always had no problem going out there for 45 minutes and ripping around with the kids. And then, you know, that, and just in doing that, like I found like, you know, there's people that are then like asking me to go out for dinner after. And all of a sudden we had these events where it would be like after a game, all the players are going to Bubba's in the lounge. It's like a marksman party. And we would do stuff like that. It would be so much fun. Like, I'm not saying there was thousands of people there, but like there was people that were there and like took an interest in that. You guys were a hockey team representing the local town, and they take pride in their sports. You know, Americans, they take pride in their sports culturally to a totally different level than Canadians, I think. And something that I kind of look up to because these people are from Fayetteville. This is their hockey team in their town, and they're proud of them. And they made us feel that way, and it's great. Especially as, like, you know, there's a lot of kids, well, basically any community you're playing in the Southern League or any minor hockey market, probably don't have any local guys on your team. So for them to be the way they are and so welcoming to just a bunch of outsiders coming in and representing their town, and they really take care of them. And I think it's awesome. And I mean, that's another thing, too. Like, you know, you're not making $1 million, but you have this schedule and you have a kind of a network when you get down there. Like, if you really wanted to, like, some guys are a little, not lazy, but a lot of guys, when they get in season mode, especially during the year, like, they're not going to want to go to practice and, you know, go get a little part-time gig at the end of the day. But, like, you could do that in the SP especially. And, you know, even if it was just a couple hours, like, you could do that, make a little extra money, prolong your minor league career if you wanted to. But yeah, great community. And like, it is like, it's not even, it is carny in a way, but like you said, at that level you need it, and that's what makes it awesome.
Absolutely. Well, just to go back on the jersey thing for a sec, like you said, there's however many SpongeBob night and Star Wars night and Kiss night and whatever, Valentine's Day and all that shit, and they got jerseys for all of them and they auction them off after and whatever. What did the players think of that? Were they just like, whatever, like, or did they kind of get into it too? Or were they just like, this is so stupid?
To a point, like, so I think, like, I mean, especially in the Southern League, I mean, you kind of got to get into it. I think they do a lot of that in the East Coast too. I don't know if they do more of it in the Southern League, but I was like astounded. Like, I can't, like, I want to say we played 56 games this year, and I think we wore like something like 14 different jerseys. And it was crazy. Like, on Sundays, because Fayetteville was a big army town with Fort Bragg, like just on the outskirts, we had a salute to service day with these awesome, like, USA jerseys that we'd wear every Sunday. And then, but I mean, like, yeah, some of them were a joke. Like, sometimes guys get a little rattled. Like, this year, this was kind of funny. And, like, this was the one of the funniest I've been a part of. We had a two games that were part of this night. It was the Rocky versus Rambo night. So we were playing Macon at home and home. And we Fayetteville was Rocky and Macon was Rambo. And our jerseys were fucking hilarious. Like, I'll have to send you. So what they by accident did, I don't know who's the guys up in the office ordering them or whoever decided that these were our jerseys. I'm assuming it's someone from Fanful. And I'm assuming who made that decision might hear this show. So if you're listening, I'm just laughing at you. I'm not laughing, like, not making fun of you. I'm just laughing at the scenario that happened. But they had, like, I forget what movie it is. It's the first one when he has, like, the gold robe, right, in Rocky.
Yep.
When he's Italian Stallion. So we had the gold robe, and it looked like we had that on as our top. But then they bought us pant covers, and they were, like, the Apollo Creed, like, USA one. So that was a different movie when he wore those. But so they mixed those two movies up, it seemed like. So we looked hilarious. We had the gold robe with, like, the Captain American shorts. And then our socks looked like boxing shoes that were tied up about halfway up our calf, and then it was a hairy leg. But the pant shells were way too small. And, like, I don't have the longest stride to begin with. I can't be losing any inches on that stride. But then you put these pant covers on, and it just felt like, oh, I could barely get my wingspan going. It was hilarious. So, yeah, like, when it gets into shit like that, like, yes, sometimes the jerseys get annoying because you'd order so many of them. Like, sometimes they might come in, like, really big, or a lot of the times they'd come in really small. And it would just be nothing worse than playing with a small jersey, especially as somewhat of a bigger guy. I'd be fucking pissed. But, I mean, at the end of the day, it was always all fun. And the auctions were fun. So, like, we'd always do these live auctions. And that's why, like, the people that worked for Fayetteville were awesome. And I had a lot of fun with them. So, like, one time I just, like, ripped the microphone out of the girl's hand, the guy's hand that usually did our auctions, like, kind of rudely. I just, like, literally grabbed it out of his hand. And then I just started doing the auction myself for my own jersey a couple times, and they liked it. And then they let me do it once or twice for the thing, and it was pretty fun. So they did stuff like that. That was awesome. And they actually really liked the project. And they, like, one time I remember someone sent me a picture of, like, they would do hilarious shit for me. Like, it was in between periods, and, like, someone said, like, they would show – it would be like, make sure you listen to the podcast. And it would be like, number three, Harrison Harper's own podcast. Like, they would do shit like that and put it up on the Jumbotron. Like, it was pretty funny.
That's tremendous. Well, I always say with those jersey auctions, I can't believe some of the prices those jerseys go for. I'm like, holy shit. Like, yeah.
Disgusting. Oh. Blows my mind. I'd be like, I just can't believe the amount of money. Like I remember we had a goalie on our team. He had a jersey go for like $1,400 American. And then, like, I had a jersey or two go for, like, $800. And I'm like, could you imagine? It was crazy. But, I mean, they are cool. They are one of a kind. And, I mean, if it's, you know, it has value to someone. Like, I always, that's one thing that sucked is, like, I always wanted to, you know, I couldn't ask the team to just give me one. You know what I mean? So I would always be like, okay, well, maybe this will be the day that I may try to buy my own. And I'd always laugh. I'd be like, not a chance. Like, I'm not outbidding someone for hundreds of dollars for my own jersey. Maybe in a couple of years I'll reach out and maybe can find one. But, yeah.
At the end of the year, did you keep a jersey, though? Like, you had to have gotten your regular one.
No, that was one thing I didn't like. They gave us the opportunity to order a jersey. I didn't want to. I should have now, looking back at it. I wish I did. But they didn't give me a jersey. But in Birmingham, what they would do is at the end of the year, they'd always give you, like, the one year I played there, they gave me, like, the white. They let me take the white jersey home. And then the other year I got cut and didn't get one. But, no, I was hoping
Fayetteville would do that, but no, I didn't get to, I don't have a Fayetteville jersey of mine, and I have a jersey of everywhere else I've played almost after from junior on, so I don't have a marksman jersey. So maybe if anyone's ever listening to that, you can track anyone down and I'd pay you for it.
Oh, I can't believe that team didn't give you a one at the end of the year. That's brutal. Come on, Fayetteville. Yeah, I know someone at the office is listening. That's Bush. You guys got to do that for you.
Yeah, tell them to get off their wallets up there if they're listening. Off the wallets, boys.
Exactly.
Get off them.
Exactly.
No, yeah, I was really hoping to get that. Yeah, that would have been fun. But
did they sell them? Did they sell them, or are they just going to reuse them?
Oh, they would have sold them. Like, it was crazy. Like, that was one thing that always made me scream laugh about the SP2. Is like, if you think you're, well, I'm certainly on the teams I'd played in the SP2. Like, if you think you're going to get your fucking gear to go home in the summer and play, no. Like, I'm not joking. They took it. They took everything back. Almost, I thought they were going to ask me for my jock strap. Like, I didn't get to keep my helmet, my gloves, my bag, my pants. I had to give back my Under Armour. Like, the fucking Under Armour long sleeve tight shirt that I wore for 57 games. I had to, in every practice of the entire season, I had to give it back to them at the end of the year.
Wow. Well, there we go. We're on a
boat. I think they sold it. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, who the fuck would buy that? But I did see, like, they had a raffle that you could, like, they had a raffle that was, like, they won all of, it was, like, win Harrison's gear bag, and you can do that. So, I mean, yeah, I'm sure it went to someone that, I mean, at least thinks it's cool. But to be honest, I wouldn't have minded a fucking pair of gloves in a bucket to rip around with now that I'm a beer leaguer. I can't be going out and buying gloves.
Shit's expensive, you know what I mean? Man.
No, yeah. But... shit's crazy, and like, I mean, that's one thing too. Wish, like, now thinking about having to buy sticks and pay for skate sharpings and stuff makes your head spin, because hockey's, I mean, it's always been an expensive sport for the last 20 years, but even it's getting worse and worse. It's getting worse. But that's why, like, you know, it sounds bad. Sounds bad, you know, when you see, like, you don't get your jersey at the end of the year and your gloves and stick. But honestly, the expenses of all this shit, and I mean, I'm sure they're just trying to, you know, make as much money as possible. So I understand that's all part of the hustle. The way
Yeah. I know. I was kind of the soft spot for the jersey thing. I always think guys, because I just look now as an older, looking back, and I talk to the young guys all the time or whatever. It's like, get your jersey. You might not give a shit now, but trust me, when you're old, you'll wish you had taken it. Trust me. You know, I always say that to them. It's amazing the number of guys that I've had on the show that I talk to that have nothing from their career. They have no jerseys. They got nothing. And it's just like, or pitchers. Some of these guys don't even have pitchers. Because we're talking like 90s and shit. Like, now everybody takes pictures and it's on Flickr and Twitter and all over the place. But in the 90s and shit, right? So you got guys that played in the East Coast League or IHL back in the day, and like, they have no pitchers. There's no hockey cards of them. They have no jerseys. It's like, other than being on Hockey DB, it's like they don't exist. Like, no one has a record of them playing. Like, there's no visual confirmation of them playing anywhere. And it's like, and it sucks. I feel bad for them.
Yeah, no doubt. Especially now that we're looking around at the way things are with everyone having a million pictures of everything, you know?
Yeah.
Nice to have some things like to remember by. But yeah, the jersey's definitely a soft spot. So I'll probably, the thing is though, like, I know I wanted to order one too, but there's also like, there's a magic about like wearing one that you play the game in, you know?
Well, yeah, exactly. Or, no, like, you gotta have the
having
game.
One that was,
yeah, you gotta have the game.
So yeah, I didn't really care to order one. Like, that wasn't really what I wanted to do, but Fayetteville had really nice jerseys too. Really nice. Maybe not the nicest that showed up on camera. They were really dark, but they had real good uniforms. And honestly, the SPHL as a whole, they have great team names, great logos, and great jerseys, honestly.
Yep.
Like, really good. Yeah. So,
yeah.
I mean, great. They're doing a great job on that front.
Well, I got a few guys I know that listen to this show and that I talk to on Twitter all the time. They're jersey guys. And they're into that game-worn shit, and they have all that stuff. Like that guy in Quad City, Jay there. Oh, yeah, he's got tons of game. I'm going to put them on the case, and we're going to track down a Harrison Harper game-worn jersey. And there'll be one. We'll get you one.
Well, a Fayetteville one, because I have a white Birmingham one. But I wouldn't mind a Fayetteville one. I don't even care if it's some crazy promotional night. But that, yeah, that would be cool. I figured what maybe it'd be better to do this now, reach out instead of waiting 10 years when it's in a garage sale and burnt or something.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Get on it sooner rather than later.
And now, a message from our sponsors.
The NFL action is in full swing here at the DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. We're talking touchdowns, big plays, and even bigger wins. New customers can bet just $5 on any NFL team to win and get $200 in free bets if they do. If that's not enough, everyone can boost their winnings with DraftKings stepped up same game parlays. Right now, for every leg you add, you can boost your winnings up to 100% with payouts bigger than ever. Why bet anywhere else? To make things even sweeter, you can throw down on stepped up same game parlays once per game day all season long. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the promo code THPN to get $200 in free bets if your team wins when you place a $5 bet on any football game. That's code THPN only at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. Lately, with work being as busy as it's been, I've spent a lot of time catching up on my podcast, my Jim Cornette, my Five for Fighting podcast. And it's been great. You know why? One of the reasons why it's been great? Because I've been using my Raycon wireless earbuds to do it. Raycon's everyday earbuds look, feel, and sound better than ever. With optimized gel tips for that perfect in-ear fit, these earbuds are so comfortable and they will not budge. Trust me. Raycons give you an 8 hours of playtime as well as a 32-hour battery life. Raycons are priced just right. You get quality audio at half the price of the other premium audio brands. It's no wonder Raycon's everyday earbuds have over 50,000 five-star reviews. Noise isolation, awareness mode. You know, I wear them at work when I'm kind of getting in and out of the truck. Also, when I'm in the shop, they're perfect. So go to raycon.com/THPN today and get 15% off your Raycon order. That's buyraycon.com/THPN to score 50% off. But, well, here, we're like an hour and 20 in and we're yapping about the Southern Pro League, but I got to ask you, because I know there is some, this wasn't fun. This wasn't a good time and there was some issues here. And we're going to talk about your East Coast League call up. So you get signed on December 15th. You get the call to Norfolk of the East Coast Hockey League. And I remember I'm like, holy shit, he's going up to the East Coast League. And I made a big post on Twitter and I'm like, oh, here we go. I think I text you and all that. And I'm like, this is going to be great. And then you're done after one game. And it was just like, what the,
yeah.
And it was just like, what the fuck? What happened? So what went on there? And yeah, what is going on?
Yeah. So yeah, it was funny. Cause like that was the beauty of it. I was fired up to get a call and then take a call. And yeah, it was one and done. I played one game and that's what makes me laugh now. Like, I always wanted to play in the Coast. And now looking back, I could look back and say I played one singular game in the ACHL. Makes me laugh. No, but so, yeah, it wasn't a great experience. And like, I haven't even talked about this on my own show because I've had plans of like talking about this for a full episode, but I'll do my best, to reiterate the situation right now. And like, it's unique to me. I'm not bashing the league or anything like that, but it's just, you know, a unique scenario I found myself in with the current day and age, with the way things rolled out with COVID and everything like that. But so yeah, I always wanted to play in the Coast. And then so 2021, the pandemic, the true COVID year, we'll call it, when there's only 13 Coast teams, you know, like there was no chance I was going to be playing in the Coast that year. Personally, for myself, there was just no chance that was going to happen. And then so last year, I almost didn't even play, wasn't even thinking about like trying to play in the Coast. And then I get to Fayetteville, and honestly, like I'm playing at the start of the year, and like one of my assistant coaches, Jason Binkley, he spent a year with Fayetteville, and now he's actually the assistant coach with Worcester, if I said that right, the Railers up in the Coast now. But he was my assistant coach, and he was telling me, and he was like, "Hey, Harrison, like I think, you know, you think you're a good player, and I think, you know, a couple things I can work on with you, and I don't think that there's a reason that, you know, you couldn't be pushing, you know, be a regular in the ACHL level." And it was weird. Like, my whole life, like, I've always wanted to play at the highest level I can. Like, I've always been looking ahead at, like, well, okay, like, after school, like, I'm hoping to keep playing. Like, after junior, hoping to go to school. After school, hoping to go pro. And, like, you know, it was weird. Like, he said this to me, and, like, my instinct in my head was like, fuck, I don't even give a shit. He's like, I'd rather, in my head, my instinct when he's telling me this, I'm like, rather just fucking stay here on the same team all year and just, like, enjoy myself and, like, try and make a run at being a good team and maybe trying to, like, go for a championship or something like that. Like, that was where my head was instantly. So then, about a couple months, it was maybe a month into the year or so, I'm in the cold tub and kind of been, like, talking, obviously, like, very, like, you know, talking about the coast and some guys are getting call-ups and whatnot. And then, like, you know, the SPHL, like, coaches want guys to go up, you know, cause, you know, they want to develop guys to get better and go play at higher levels. And especially, like, that's a lot of their selling pitch, like, to get guys to come places is, like, how many guys they put in the coast or how they can get you looks and whatnot. But they're trying to make fucking good teams in the league. So, like, there is, if you have an open relationship with your coach and you kind of, he knows where you're kind of at in your career. Like, I've been open with my coach, kind of, like, telling him, like, I'm not looking to, like, make the ECHL. He's like, I kind of was open with him. I was like, I'm kind of looking at more, like, fucking hanging out here and not hanging out, but, like, taking it seriously here and, you know, just being a marksman and taking that seriously. And then I get a, he tells me I'm in the cold tub. He's like, Idaho asked if you wanted to go up for two nights, for Friday, Saturday. And then that's literally what they would say. And I had a roommate who, he got called up, like, really early in the year. And they said the same thing to him. And I forget which team it was, but they called him up, and they were like, you want to come, and you want to play Friday night and Saturday night, you're going home Sunday. And my buddy had to travel. And he went up, and he played the Friday and the Saturday, and he came right home. And then he got called up again, and he went somewhere, and it was the same kind of thing. They're like, yeah, we got guys on COVID. Come up, play two games, and go back. He goes up. Someone ends up getting hurt when he's up there. He ends up hanging out there for, like, almost a month but comes back. But anyways, so they'd call you, and they would literally be like, hey, we need you for this weekend, and then we're sending you back on Monday. And, like, I don't know, me, like, 27, like, I don't know, not saying I was, like, old or anything, but, like, in the hockey, pro hockey world, like, getting old, especially the guy, like, fucking only in his second, third year of pro. And I'm just kind of like, yeah, they pay you to go and shit like that. But, like, do I want to go fly across the country to play two games when, like, and I know you got to go up there and you got to prove yourself. And if you don't go, you won't stay. And, you know, maybe you go up there and maybe a guy breaks his hand and then, you know, you're in the lineup. Or maybe you go up and unless you get a hat trick from the point or if you go there and someone gets hurt and you're in the lineup, like, you're going home after those two games. Like, that's a fact. And, like, I'm a very big optimist person. Like, trust me, like, I've been cut more than anyone. I've been very hopeful in hockey situations the whole life. But, like, this year I was just like, I don't care to fucking go through that. Like, I don't care. And there was even a weekend where I got a call up, and we had a weekend where I had no games. And we had a weekend off. It was so weird in the spill. We just had a week where we didn't have games. And Iowa, that new team last year, called me. And they called me, and they're telling me, like, hey, we know you don't have any games this weekend. Like, we just had a couple guys get hurt. Like, we desperately need bodies. We need you right now. Like, heard about you. Heard you bring, like, presents and stuff like that. And then I, like, my instinct as he's telling me this is, like, I was like, fuck, like, my instinct is, like, I don't want to go. Like, the second he's telling this, like, my gut instinct is, like, I don't fucking want to go. And, like, it sounds bad, but I was like, we didn't have any, like, I was like, I'd rather just chill this weekend and fly up to fucking Iowa and go through all that right now. And maybe it wasn't the right thing to do, or maybe it wasn't. But, like, I got quite a few calls. Like, I must have got almost 15 calls or something like that last year and throughout the year. But my heart was telling me, like, I didn't give a fuck to go. But then, like, it was around that Iowa call-up where I was, like, really debating it. And, like, so the coach calls me back, and he goes, basically says, like, we don't have a physical presence, and we don't have a physical presence, and like, if you were able to come in and bring that, like, he's basically telling me, if you come in and smash some fucking head, like, we'd definitely keep you around. And I'm like, in my head, I'm just like, confident that I can do that. But like, I mentioned this on my last episode too. Like, once you go do 5 years of CIS after playing that way, and like, you just can't fight, and you don't fight, like, my ambitions to play that role full time were zero. And especially, I was like, I mean, like, I'm a big room guy. Like, I was like, for me to fly up to Iowa right now and defend this room, like, these guys are my blood. Like, I don't even know these guys. I'm like, for me at 27 to fly up there right now, be a punching bag. Like, I mean, this isn't the show to make this fucking claim to bitch about when you've had some absolute nail guns on. But I was just like, I didn't have an interest in really doing it. I was like, fuck that. And then, so a couple more calls are coming in, but it was around that Iowa call that I started thinking in my head. I was like, okay, well, you're going to want to take at least one. Like, you might not want to go, and you might be comfortable here and like your situation, but and if the year passes and you don't take any calls, you're going to fucking regret it. So I'm like, okay. So one night, it was December. I can't even remember. Yeah, it was December.
December 15th.
So it was December. I get a text. It wasn't even a call. And it wasn't my coach calling me. It was Anthony Collins, actually. He's been on Alex's show a bunch and shit. He's a beauty. And I played with him in Birmingham during that COVID year. And he texts me, sup, dude. And I'm like, he fucking, like, me and him, like, buddies, we played together, but, like, I don't text Collie ever. So he texts me, sup, dude. My heart almost sinks right away because, like, I know he's going to text me something. He's on Norfolk at the time. And I'm like, I know he's going to text me being like, we need guys, like, come on up. And that's why, like, it wasn't even as much that I didn't want the call up. It was the way that they were coming, and I mean, anyone would say that that is just the way it is in the coast. Like, no one's calling from the coast being like, we want Harrison Harper from the Marksman, that guy. We've heard a lot about his game down there. He's really playing well. We need him. No, like, they need bodies, and they call, and they need a guy to get called up, and that's how you get up there. But, like, I just didn't like the... I don't know. I mean, maybe it was the COVID factor, but like, they were calling being like, yeah, two guys in the A, sick. We had to send two guys up. We need you to come for the weekend and go home. I was like, fuck that. So anyways, finally get a call. Same thing's kind of going on. They're short on bodies in Norfolk. And Norfolk? I always laugh. I thought it was like Norfolk, but now I swear that I saw somewhere that it's called Norfolk. So I'm going to just say Norfolk for the duration of me talking about it from here on out. But so I knew Anthony Collins. There was another guy, Mackenzie Dwyer, who I also played with in Birmingham. And then there was a guy, Marley Quince, who was up there as well, that I had played with earlier in Fayetteville. And he got called up and stuck. And he was, you know, he's a good player. He'd played in the coast before. So I knew three, four guys that were on that team. And I was like, okay, like, you're going to regret not taking any calls. And actually, the year that COVID fucked everything up, I was originally going to go to Norfolk and try out and try and make the team. They wouldn't sign me, but I had a lot of talks with their coaching staff throughout that whole summer. And, you know, he spent a lot of time talking to me, so I assumed they were quite interested. And so it was the same staff. So then I was kind of unsure, but then he called me, and the guy actually remembered exactly who I was. So I was like, okay, like, that made me feel pretty good about the scenario. So I was like, okay, like, fucking right. It's like, I'll come in, and it'll be all good. And it just worked out that when they called me, it was like a shit show. Like, they asked me if I'd go, and, like, that was one thing, like, that, like, would always suck about getting a call up, because, like, the second you hear about it, your heart almost drops, because you know it's going to be like, if you say yes to the call and you're in the cold tub, you better grab a fucking towel and get showered up and sprint out of the rink, because you probably got to be somewhere fast. So he texts me, and then sure enough, they got a game the next day. I agree to go and take the call up. The coach calls me, like I said, makes me feel good about it. I had a couple of buddies that were there, so I'm like, fucking right, let's go. First post game, like, maybe I like it. Maybe I can find a way to stick. Like, the coach called me. He's basically saying, like, you know, they're having a lot of trouble with finding, you know, reliable D-men. And he's like, if you can come in and play good. And then the guy that was there, like, they love fucking scrappers. That whole division in the South is pretty nailed. So I think they are, like, always trying to be tough, too, because you kind of got to be – kind of got to have a nailed squad in the coast to be good. And they wanted that, like, big time. And that was kind of how my agent had sold myself. Like, you know, I knew I was a school guy and stuff, but, like, you know, not that I fought 40 times in a season, but I was down to fight in the Western League and fought a bit. And, you know, he was saying, like, especially with the new, like, 10-fight rules, he's like, you know, this guy could maybe give you that. And so that was how I started that relationship with him. So then, like, immediately he calls me back. And when I get there, you know, I can tell. Just, like, the second I get there, like, I can just tell the way he's talking to me. He's basically saying, like, grab someone. And anyway, so, but I get called up, and I agree to go, and then it's the next day I have to leave. And in Birmingham, we were about to leave on a road trip that day. So I think we were traveling or something like that. And so I had to go to the rink early. I grabbed my gear, and then, like, what it's like in the spill, like, because this happens all the time, like, you have to give everything back. Like, all your fucking gear, all this shit. Like, you act like you're about to move out because they don't know if you're going to come back, because a lot of guys don't. Like, I've had roommates in the spill that have left, and they got shit in the closet in their truck in the parking lot out front for the entire season because they got called up a week into the spill year across the country, and they could never get their shit. So they do treat it like you're gone forever. So I take the call up, and in my head, like, you know, it was Christmas time, and the coast had a Christmas break this year. They had a week off, and a lot of guys got to go home, and I knew the Christmas break was only like 3 or 4 games away, so I was like, I imagine you'll see me before too long, like, even if I do end up cracking it full time somehow, sure, I'll be back during this Christmas break. But so I agree to go up. The game's that night, so I have my trusty Dakota in Fayetteville, and I gas it up, and I drive up to Norfolk the day of the game. And I don't know why, but I can't remember if it was like I got away late in the day because that was the way it worked out with the call or whatever, but I literally rolled into Norfolk with time to go. I went straight to Subway. I checked into my hotel, put my suit on, and I called my – so they play at the Spectrum, if I'm not mistaken. That's what it's called. And it's a fucking beautiful barn.
It's a straight Scope, down, isn't it? Like, isn't it called Norfolk, the Scope?
The Scope. Sorry, that's what it is, not the Spectrum. The Scope. Yeah, I knew it was something like that. But, like, Norfolk's a beautiful city, like, right in the water, harbor town, a lot of military and stuff. It's right by Virginia Beach, like, beautiful spot. And this rink, the Scope, is, like, right not far off the water and just, like, right in the downtown little area. It's sick. But it's got, like, an underground parkade and shit. It's kind of hard to get into. So my buddy gets me in there. I get it. I walk in. You know, you got to do the whole fucking, hey, how are you? You got to meet all the boys. But, like, the coast is weird, right? And, like, I'm sure it was even weirder this year because, you know, there's all, like, some teams go through 70, 80 guys in a year, on a normal year. Maybe even last year it was even worse. I'm sure maybe the numbers show maybe it wasn't. But anyways, they see a lot of guys. So, like, I know this. So, like, I'm not, and, like, I'm kind of, like, I know, I read the room well. I'm not selling myself short, but I'm not some fucking hot ticket stud who just got called up. I'm not about to walk around and shake every single guy's hand in the room. You know what I mean? And introduce myself. Because I don't know if I'll be around long enough for them to remember. And then, so I get in there, and, like, it's just funny. Like, these guys see so many bodies in a year, like, that they might not even notice that there's a new guy there. It's like walking down the train at the Metro in New York City. Like, it's just like random people walking by you, but they might be on your team that night. Like, that's basically what it seemed like the coast was like. Like, these guys have no idea who's who, to a degree, it seemed like. And anyway, so I'm in there, like, I'm not saying much. I sat, luckily, right next to the guy I played with earlier in Fayetteville. So I just kind of, you know, sat there and did my thing. And we get called up there. So it's getting to the rink there. It's around, we had a 7 o'clock game. It was like, I showed up like 4:30. Had to sign a couple of medical forms and stuff, really. But usually, you know, you get there two and a half hours early for a game. Anyways, we roll in there. It's 5 o'clock. We have a team meeting. And it was only a head coach and an assistant coach. And we have a team meeting at 5 o'clock. We start doing video. So we get all the lights turned off. It's kind of dim there. Turn a couple of lights down so we can see it. And, like, this always happens. I find, like, they don't, there's no video coach, right? So it's just the two of them. And, like, by the time that we, like, get all of our video done that, like, was not efficiently done at all, as well at all, can't get the computer to work, it won't load, fucking plugging it in and unplugging it. It's 5:48. It's 5:48 when we stopped doing video. We have a 7 o'clock game. We did video for 48 minutes straight, just sitting there. And then, like, I don't know about anyone, but, like, you can't retain any video session that's longer than 6 minutes long. I don't care if you're, like, the most dialed-in athlete ever, especially watching hockey video, to me, was always so dry. So dry. Like, you have to be really good at video for players to even get anything out of it. And when I mean, like, good at it, like, you have to make the people get something out of it. You can't just go up and fucking run plays and, like, just run parts of a game, watch the first period and be like, okay, we're good to go. Like, but that's kind of what this felt like. So I'm sitting there, like, I've been in the truck all day. I haven't even done, like, a leg swing. And then I get in there. By the time I do all these medical forms, we freaking do 48 minutes of video in the dark. And then it's, like, time to go warm up. And, like, we're warming up. And fucking, yeah, whatever. We're going. We're playing Wheeling that night. And then I got to wear, like, I've never skated with the boys yet. And so then we got to throw on all the new gear. Like, I asked for 15. That's what I usually wear. But I was wearing, like, a different glove in the SP than the one I got in the coast. It was a 4-roll. So the 15 felt like fucking Sasquatch gloves. These things were fucking huge. I felt like I was playing in the 90s with a big pair of leather Bowers. And these things are huge. I got a new helmet, you know, new pants and stuff. I didn't need a twig because I was using the same twig that they were using. And naturally in the East Coast, they're not going to give you a new one if they don't have to, right? So I didn't get a new twig. And then we're in there. And the best part was I broke a twig, too, in the coast. And they didn't even give me a new one in my new one game. So I basically went up to the coast and just went down a twig. And, yeah, so I get up there. We're playing Wheeling. Like, Norfolk wasn't that great last year. And just so happened the way the game went, like, we didn't play very well. We lost, like, 7-2. And, like, in between periods, man, like, the coast is a very, very odd dynamic, I find, because, like, these guys, like, there's guys in the East Coast League that are, like, on NHL contracts. And then there's a guy like myself who just got called up from the fucking SP and was eating Subway an hour ago driving his Dakota here for the game. But then this guy's, like, signed with Carolina and was playing in the A a week ago. And I was, like, so it's just a hilarious dynamic, like, how the top to the bottom, like, what, like, the different, like, personalities and life situations that these guys are going to. Like, some guys are, like, in the coast, have, like, a deal with Bauer as a goalie and, like, fucking get a bunch of money and they're having an NHL deal and, like, they're not millionaires, but they're making good money. And then there's guys in the coast that make $500 a week. So it's, like, very odd. And it's almost like guys that are on NHL deals, and, I mean, I don't have a breadth of coast knowledge to fucking speak on this. And this is just what I've seen from my own experiences and just, like, I mean, I have a lot of buddies that play in the coast and talk to a lot of guys that have been around the coast and shit like that. It just almost, like, it just seems like there's, like, this, not like a hierarchy, but it's just, like, hilarious. Like, when I was there, they're not playing good. And in between periods, like, you know, there's a little bit of frustration in the room. And it was just, like, a couple of young guys that were, like, on NHL deals just start fucking losing it. And, like, I think it was a goalie. I can't really remember. Just fucking losing it, like, being, like, do you guys want to be pro hockey players? You can't play on shitty teams or you will not have a long career. You see the guys that are paving out long careers, they don't play on shitty. It was just like crazy. They're going on just like ripping guys. Like one guy was like half a second late for warm up and everyone's yelling about that in between the fucking intermissions and shit. Like I literally swear it felt like guys on contracts screaming at non-contract guys. And in my head, I'm sitting there, I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? And, like, we're getting smoked. And then, like, I get out there and I laugh. Like, there was this situation, like there was a fucking the second period guy going and covers the puck. And, like, a guy, like, briefly, like, fucking skated by. Like, didn't even do anything. And, like, yeah, I should have been in there fucking causing more of a ruckus. But, like, I honestly didn't think anything happened. And he fucking, like, pulled me aside. He's like, you should have fucking went at that guy there. And I was like, where? He's like, after that whistle, goalie covered the puck. I'm like, in our own end? He's like, yeah. He's just, like, making me laugh. Like, didn't tell me anything about how I was playing. But, like, then he tells me, like, right then, he's like, Grady, like, you should have went at that guy. And it was just, like, fucking hilarious. Like, I had no clue what was going on. It was just crazy. Anyway, we fucking lose the game. We don't play very well. I try to go out and grab some food with my buddy I play with in Birmingham, and we end up going to this place, and of course, the entire fucking Wheeling team is there, and they're just getting wasted, like getting fucking pickled. And there was they played Wheeling, but then this was a Thursday, then they didn't play Friday, and they played them two more times that weekend. So we played the Thursday night game, we get fucking blasted. Then we go out for dinner after, we see, like, Wheeling's literally out there, like, they're, I don't know, I'm pretty sure, like, I've always heard, like, on the road and the coast, like, still to this day, like, you just go out and get loaded every night. And Wheeling's literally there just getting loaded with their fucking coaches. Like, their coaches are just right with them at the bar, like, just smashing them like they are. I had beers with my buddy. I remember, like, going back to the hotel to go to bed, and, like, the whole Wheeling team's, like, for some reason they put me up in a hotel that Wheeling happened to be at. And these guys, it was, like, pretty late. Like, not late, but, like, it was sometime, and they were all just in the lobby in, like, this side room, just, like, keeping the night going. And I was kind of like, that's pretty sick if that's what the coast is like on the road. But anyway, so we had practice the next day. So I get back, and we're like, okay, I better get a little sleep in here, and then we'll go to practice tomorrow. So I go to practice tomorrow. There was a couple guys that were hurt and stuff, right? And a couple guys that weren't playing, and I never met them. Like, they weren't down in the room, right? So then there's a couple more guys, like, you're in the process of meeting and stuff like that, saying, like, hi, how are you? Like, I'm Harry. Like, nice to meet you. Where are you from? Calgary. Oh, yeah. All that shit, you know? And then, sure enough, should have waited another 3 or 4 minutes, but I get the bottom half of my Under Armour on, and, like, I just put my Under Armour on, put my socks on. I still have my hoodie on, like, my street clothes and my hat, and I hear the fucking, hey, Harper. Yeah, coach wants to see in his office. And I'm laughing in my head. I just kind of, like, even just gave one of these, like, ah. I was like, already? Like, I just knew in my head. I'm like, they're fucking gassing me. Like, there's no chance they're calling me in there to look at X's and O's on the video screen, do face-off details. So I laugh, and I don't have slide flip-flops. I only have the thongs. So I'm sitting there half-dressed. I just throw my feet through my socks and my little thong flip-flops that I got in a beer case that I use as shower flops. I walk down the scope. They have to go down the path to Zamboni, all the way down the hall to go to the coach's office. And you got to walk through, like, the business office to get there. So I'm walking through there with the snap of my flip-flops. Snap, 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 snap. I go in there and I sit down. I fuck in. It's the two coaches, and they're in their office there. This is literally, like, I fucking scream laugh because, like, if I was a screenwriter, like, I would, like, you know, like in Superbad when they, like, interview and there's tuxedos and it's, like, fucking hilarious scene for, like, an interview. Like, if this was, like, Shorzy or fucking Letterkenny, like, this is how, like, the screenwriter should have wrote this fucking, like, this interaction going down. Like, is me getting cut from the Norfolk Admirals. It was fucking hilarious. So I walk in the office, I sit down on this couch, and the coach is in there, and the assistant coach is in there. And they got, like, this real weird fucking vibe. Like, you don't know who's in charge. Like, is the associate coach, assistant coach, like, he telling us what to do? Does he come up with the systems? And is the coach just, like, the fucking director of morale? Or what's going on here? Like, I heard rumors that, like, the coach was into it with the owner because the owner and him used to play together in Norfolk in, like, the 90s. And then I heard, like, the assistant coach was, like, never steps in if he doesn't agree with what the coach is doing because he almost wants the coach to get fired so that he can step in and take his job. I heard rumblings of this dynamic. And to be honest, it was starting to become evident through the video session I had to endure the night before. But anyways, to cut to the chase, I go in there, I sit down, I'm sitting on this little couch, and they just go, this is why I had to bring this up, because it's weird. We're in this office, the assistant coach, associate coach, is behind the desk. I don't know if we were, maybe it was his office, but he's behind his computer at the desk, and the head coach is on the couch to my left, and I'm sitting in, like, the typical, like, chair that would be in front of a desk or an office, you know what I mean, for a guest. And I'm sitting there, and he just goes, so how'd you think you did out there last night? I'm like, oh, I'm not going to lie. I don't think I played my best. I don't think I played my worst. But, you know, getting my feet wet, I guess, it's, you know, looking to improve from there. And he just goes, yeah, I don't think you're very good either. And then he goes, and I get it. You got called up last minute last night. And then you got to get in the truck this morning. You got to drive up here the day of the game, get checked into the hotel. You never got to skate with us. You know, you got to put on the new gear and, you know, meet all the new guys, new systems, new league, new experience. I get that. New city. It's a lot. It's a lot to take in. And I get that's very hard. But all those things considered, I still don't think you were very fucking good. And then word for word, he said this. And then I think I just laughed. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. And then he basically just said, and then he brings up, he goes, and then there's that play there, you know, so-and-so covers the puck in her own end, and you don't even go and grab that guy. And I'm just, like, kind of, again, like, laughing. I'm like, I don't even almost know what fucking play you're talking about. But, yeah, I don't know, I guess, yeah, I don't know. And then he gives me 2 seconds. Like, you work on your pivoting, maybe a little bit of skating. And, you know, other than that, yeah, it's just not going to work out. And I fucking just have to go back out. Then I have to walk back into the room, fucking peel off the half of your underarm you got on your body. And then they had, like, in Norfolk, they had Violent Gentlemen Hockey Club, like the apparel company. That was who did their gitch, like their hoodies and their shorts and all this stuff. And, like, the coat is cheap as fuck, too. And, I mean, maybe this was just Norfolk, but so I knew they weren't going to let me keep this shit. So, like, I'm packing up my bag I got from university, because apparently no one else in the fucking world would let me take a bag home. And I'm piling my shit in the bag, and then I grab all my Violent Gentlemen Norfolk apparel, and I just ram it into the bottom of the bag as fast as I can. I'm like, this stuff's sick. Like, I got to get out of here with this at least. And, like, I just about to put the bag over my shoulder. I walk out. I got my sticks, and I say bye to a couple guys, and I feel like I'm in the fucking clear, and I'm like, oh, baby, hell yeah. I'm like, this day sucks. This last 40 hours has been hell. But at least I got some gitch. I'm like, you know, that IKEA commercial, start the car. I'm like fucking flying. And then sure enough, the trainer, like, I'm just about to grab the doorknob to the door and really just, oh, Harps, did I grab that gitch from you? And, like, I kind of, like, fucking shoulder checked. And I don't know if it was, like, the way I felt, like, I looked at him. I should have just been like, yeah, got it to you. But he made me stop right there, and it's, like, so awkward. Like, it's kind of like in the dry room where guys get changed. There's a bunch of guys, and then I had to drop my bag and unzip it and pawn out the gitch I tried to steal in front of everyone as they just all – it's always so – like, a couple guys got cut before me even, and, like, you're just, like – that's why the coast is almost a beautiful thing. Like, guys are just getting cut left and right. There's guys saying hello that are walking in one door, and they're passing a guy who just got cut. They walk right by each other. They don't even need to introduce each other because they're never going to work together. And it goes like that a lot, but fuck, it was pretty funny, yeah. Pretty hilarious. And, like, So then I had to drive home, and I drive home from there, but Fayetteville had left to go play Macon that night. And by this time, it was physically impossible for me, even in the Dakota, to go meet the boys in Macon. And I had to stop in Fayetteville and get the rest of my Fayetteville gear because they took that from me. So I didn't play that night, but I drove all the way from Norfolk. I made a little pit stop to grab my equipment in Fayetteville. And I drove from Norfolk. I don't know how long it was. It must have been 12 hours or something. I drove right to Birmingham in the Dakota. And then I played 2 games in Friday, Saturday in Birmingham. And then made my roommate, Vinny Renda, sit in the passenger seat with me as we drove from Birmingham back to Fayetteville. All this because I took a East Coast tryout to no prevail.
Hey guys, just jumping in here, kind of a little, a post-production edit here. After Harrison and I were done doing the interview, we were just kind of talking just before we hung up, and he'd mentioned to me, he goes, you know what I didn't say? He goes, now that I'm thinking about it, he goes, I don't think Norfolk paid me. And then he kind of thought about it for a second. He's like, yeah, no, they didn't pay my trans. They didn't pay me for the game. He goes, now that I think about it, he goes, I don't remember them paying me. So yeah, his East Coast Hockey League, he basically lost money. It cost them all the gas money and the wear and tear on the Dakota to get there and back. And he didn't even get the tracksuit. So yes, there you go, folks. I just wanted to throw that in there just to add the icing on the cake, so to speak.
For no avail, whatever the saying is. But yeah, it's pretty fucking hilarious.
So I wonder if you had actually if you had grabbed the guy in Norfolk and fought him, you would have stayed.
Oh, they would have kept me. They would have kept me for sure.
Yeah,
I could have been the worst. So this is so I'm fucking happy you said this because I would have forgot to bring it up. So there was a guy. I don't know him at all, but he was playing on Roanoke, and we played Roanoke like I said 17 times. I believe his name was Sean Leonard. He's a twin, I think. And anyways, like he would fight all the time. Wasn't like a fucking huge guy or like a killer or anything like that, but like he was down to fucking scrap, and he would scrap almost anyone, it seemed like. And anyways, so they cut me, and then later that day, I see that they brought him in, and I'm like, get the fuck out of town. And then, so sure enough, he goes in this first game that Friday night against Wheeling. He fought twice. And apparently, like, I'm asking, and my buddy's telling me that coach just fucking fell in love with him. Loved him so much, he brings in his twin brother from Knoxville. And then the two of them were up there for, I don't know, a little while. They fought a couple tough guys. I don't know if it was fucking, they might have, I don't know if they were at that level yet, but I think they're probably going to keep playing. They're entertaining, at least. They're other twins. But yeah, so I got cut, and they literally just called another SP guy right up the fucking road and replaced me with them. And then he did fight. And it was just like they were just looking for a rodeo clown. And I mean, one day maybe I'll look back and be like, fuck, that clown should have been me. But in the moment, I didn't give a fuck to do that.
Well, it's such a hard role to do to begin with. But now you're kind of getting called up. Like you said, like complete. I mean, at the best of times, players are product and pieces of meat, regardless. But this is the ultimate, like, they're letting you know, like, listen, dummy, you're coming up here. You're going to be our crash test dummy for a day or two, and then you're out of here. So you already got this sense that that's what's happening. So now it's like, yeah, but come up here. But we want you to fight their toughest guy before you leave. You know, it's kind of like, well,
yeah.
I don't blame you. Like, it's, why would I do that? Like, you know, like, because there's no guarantee. Oh, if you fight him, you're here for the year. Okay, well, then maybe a person would do it. But it's like, okay, so I'm going to fight, possibly get busted up, nose broken or whatever. And then I got to hop in the Dakota and drive 12 hours because you're like, yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
I mean, well, the enthusiasm, I could see why it would be lacking a little bit.
No, for sure. Like, I mean, I do adore that fucking role, and I got such a respect for it. So it almost feels like out of respect for the role itself, it's like, fuck, someone asked you to do it, and now we're giving an opportunity to you, and, you know, that's your chance to play at a league at a level that you wanted to play. Like, yeah, you should do it, but I don't know. Like, and I don't know. Like, I like to think, like, I don't think people know how much, like, the obviously everyone talks about. The mental side of it is all it is. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, I found I dealt with. It's like I was brought in into the Western League to play that role, and I mean, I played it, didn't do an amazing job of it, is why I only played 53 games in that league. But and I was at an age where, I mean, I didn't have any fighting training at all. Like, I had no boxing background, I had no wrestling, jiu-jitsu or anything. I was just a big guy that like to throw the body around, and ended up like getting in a couple of tilts, and people saw that I was down to do that and were like, hey, if you want to keep playing that way, like, you'll be able to be on our roster. That's kind of how it happened. And I went for it, and I realized, like, not to sound like a bitch, but I was like, dude, I respect the fuck out of these guys, and I do like to fight, but I was like, if it means me playing in the WHL at the time, or in playing 1 to 2 minutes a night and getting scratched a bunch, or if I get to go down to Junior A and play 35 minutes a night, probably get a better chance post fucking junior to go to a better school, because I was always going to try and probably go to university. I was never the level of hockey player that considered like finishing out my 20-year-old year of junior and going right pro. Like, I never thought that was in my plans. So I was just like, it's going to hurt my chances of playing CIS to like continue to play this role, and I probably won't play it as a 20-year-old. Like, I was being realistic. I wasn't trying to sell myself short. Like, I just saw, and then, I don't know, like, getting asked to do that again in the East Coast level, like you were saying, it just fucking, it didn't really interest me, to be honest. It wasn't where my passions were lying. I wasn't fucking killing just to be on the roster and fucking coasting, you know?
Well, like you said, you have no ties to these guys. You're there for a brief time. There's no guarantee. Like I said, it'd be different if it's like, okay, I got my contract. I'm here for the year. Okay, well, now you're forming bonds and, you know, and you battle for the logo, and if shit happens, it happens. Okay, that you can completely understand. But like you said, when you're there for a weekend, it's like, well, you know, do I need to? You know, and I mean, that's like you said, though, that's all the more reason. Like, you look at a guy like Anthony Collins, who's done it for so long, and it's just like, those guys are, I don't mean this in a derogatory way, and I've said this a million times in the show, you have to be a little different to do it. Like, you have to, your mindset's got to be, like, you have to have that mindset. Not different, like, oh, you're weird, but, like, you have to have that mindset, and it's not just something, you can't just turn it on and off.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like I've always said, the one thing I've always heard, and it's true, is like, you can't paint stripes on a house cat and call it a tiger. It's like, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
You either have it or you don't.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I agree with that 100%. I mean, like a guy like Anthony Collins, like you play with him and like you just see the way he is on the bench and shit. And you're like, yeah, like this guy's down to get down. And you can just tell, you can usually just tell, I find.
Yeah.
You know, especially I always find, like, and a lot of times guys seem a lot scarier when they're your opponent. Like, I found, like, I'd always laugh. It was like, if you could play with every guy first, no one would ever be scared to fight anyone ever.
Yeah.
Like, when you're fighting your buddy, even if he's tough as fuck, like, you're never scared of your buddy. Like, I even back in the day, I remember I fought my one buddy, my one good friend, Kyle Hawes. And he's still a fucking nail, I think, in terms, he's a nail in any fucking time frame. And he was pretty big body in the elite, in the European British League last year anyways. But I fought him, I think I fought him twice, like, and he was the kind of caliber of guy that, like, when I last fought him in junior at 20, like, he would have been the kind of guy that I would have been probably nervous about fighting, but I knew him, so I didn't give a fuck. You know what I mean? It's just, it's such a head game, and
yeah.
I don't know. I salute anyone that does it, especially guys like Collins that have done it for so long. Like, that's very impressive and stuff like that. And, you know,
well, like you said, it's right. It's one thing when you're a physical guy, you play the body. Guys don't like getting hit. Shit's going to happen. You're going to throw down every once in a while. But that's like almost like in a course of a game through hitting and being mad and the emotion. You didn't have time to think about it the whole night or the day before. You didn't lose sleep over it. It was just, it's in the moment you're fighting. But when you're an Anthony Collins or a Kyle Newber, guys like that, and you know the next night you're fighting Travis Howe or one of these guys, or like you're Bob Probert, the next night you know Ty Domi's coming after you. Like, to be able to have to be able to, sure, to sleep like that.
Well, like, it turns into like, I mean, imagine if you're a guy on any team in the ECHL and it's late game, you're playing late in the third period one game, and a guy just brutally fucking runs someone from behind on your team, and he might get kicked out, and no one had the chance to deal with him. But then 9 days later, you know for a fact, and all these guys look at the schedule, and, you know, they know when the games are coming up. So then they know this happens. This guy gets run from behind. And then even if this guy doesn't want to admit it or not, he's probably taking a peek at the schedule and seeing, like, and maybe this is a guy on your team, and you're not even the guy who fucking did this. And then, but then you, for the next 9 days, you're like, when this team comes back, I have to beat the fuck out of this guy. You have to do it. Like, that's your role, and that's what you have, that's the job you have to take care of. These other guys have to go worry about fucking the PK and the power play. But when you have to worry about that, so at some point in the next 9 days, you're spending time thinking about that potential fight that you're going to have in your head, like, probably not just once a day, let's just say. Probably many times for the next 9 days, you're thinking about how you're going to, like, if you're going to fight Buddy, if he's going to be in the lineup, what you're going to do to him, like, how is it going to happen? Like, that's happening fucking night and day with these guys. Like, I don't think, there's one thing to be worried about fucking up and, like, you know, turning the puck over and getting scored on or not performing well. But there's a little bit different aspect when you're worried about a guy punching your fucking lights out.
Yep. And I think that's one of the big things that's lost that I've, throughout this show that I've done, I've tried to impress upon people that act, right? And get guys to talk about the mental side of it and stuff, because I've seen it firsthand, right? So it's like, you know, what guys go through. And yeah, and I mean, I always say, I guess to equate it to whatever, a life thing that maybe somebody that didn't play hockey would go through. I said, okay, it's like that movie, 3 o'clock High. So you get into it at 10 a.m. in the lunch, in the cafeteria with the toughest guy in school. And he says at 3 o'clock, you and I are going to fight behind the bushes.
Yeah.
And the whole school, no, yeah. Fight, fight, fight. So all day you got to go through school thinking in your mind at 3 o'clock, I got to go fight this guy. What is that day going to be like for you? It's going to be terrible. Well, these guys live that for an entire hockey season. That's what I mean. You've got to be a little, the mind's got to be, you got to think, you got to look at things different. You got to compartmentalize, you got to focus in on different things than the other, than like what a goal scorer would do, right? Like, it's different, man.
No, it's definitely different. I wish there was like, I don't know, because I don't think, hockey's so unique that there's so many parts of it that, I mean, even guys who play for a long time don't really, some of them might not really think about that, what some of those guys go through or especially went through, because it's not as prevalent today. I don't think there's too many guys that are worried about fucking that to the degree as they were 10 years ago in this league even. But I'm sure still though, I'm sure a guy like Zach McEwen or something like that, like, you know, guys like that that have to fight to play in the league still, I'm sure maybe they're not playing very well. And then, you know, a couple games go by and you haven't put the puck in the net and you're like, okay, like, I'm not scoring. Like, I better get in a fucking tilt right now. And then there's no reason to tilt. You're not mad. You don't have that fire. No one's done anything to tilt. And you're just kind of looking for one. And it's just like, fuck. Like, I remember that's what I used to always find. Like, I used to do that. This is why, like, you have to be kind of fucked, because it's every single day is a clean slate. Like, I remember I used to think things in my head, weird things would be like, oh, I didn't fight tonight, but I fought two nights ago. So if I don't end up getting one for another two or three games, like, that's not the worst look. But I need, or then maybe a couple too many games would cause fly, and I'd be like, fuck, I need to get in the tilt bad. Like, I can't have too many more games go by without me not getting a fight right now. And then it'd be like, I got to go out and do something or address something or something. You know what I mean? It just, I don't know. It was fun. I wasn't the best at it, but fuck, it's a hilarious. Like, it's a hilarious rule in athletics that I wish we wouldn't let die like we are in the sport right now. Like, the NHL pisses me off to no degree because, like, they have this uniqueness of their sport that no other sport has, and they try to, like, hide it and, like, diminish it. And, like, they let all these outside people who, like, weren't even fans or who will never realistically be fans of the game long term, and people that they would never profit off in the first place. It's like they're catering to these people that are not their niche marketed to begin with. It's fucking odd, but that's a totally different conversation that we don't even need to get onto, because then fuck, we might be on here for another 3 hours.
Yeah, no, I know. Hopefully I've ranted and raved about that on here a million times, but I will say though, Harrison's his first tilt as a marksman though, you made a hell of an impression. As I put it on Twitter, I put the video up on Twitter and I called it the fucking Airdrie handshake. You one-punched that fucker. One shot, bam, down he goes. I was like, holy, no wonder Norfolk thought they were getting they thought they were getting Tony Twist with his one punch. They saw it, they saw it on social media, and they're like, look at this animal that we're getting. Well, and that was against Birmingham, too, your old team. Was that sort of, after the one shot, did you sort of look over at him and be like, yeah, see, shouldn't have cut me? Did you give that one at all?
No, I honestly should have, really, because I remember, like, I wasn't pissed. Like, Birmingham had a very unique situation that year. Like, they had a good coach, and he was planning on being there, and I don't know what happened. I think there was something with his family or something happened where he lasted, like, literally, like, 2 weeks before the season was supposed to happen in 2021. Head coach couldn't go. Assistant coach has to take over. And he was literally one full year removed from playing in the Spill himself, and he had been an assistant coach that year. So he kind of got thrown into the fire, and I mean, I didn't love the way I was treated in some ways, but I didn't think that was any fault to his own. I think it was just a byproduct of that crazy COVID year. But yeah, so it was the first time I'd ever played in Birmingham since being a Bull myself. And a guy that I had actually, the best part was the guy that I fought, I actually knew pretty well personally. He used to, you should get that guy on the show, his fucking life. He's like 33 in his second year in the Spill. His life's hilarious. But anyways, this guy loves to fucking scrap. And he was fighting a lot last year. But he tells me in warm-up, and like I knew who he was. And I knew a couple guys were. So as like fucking spitting chicklets and them call it tummy sticks. Like I was saying hi to a couple guys over the red line. Like, you know, give him a nod and shit like that. And then I see this guy that I know, Nippard. And he's just kind of like, Harps, like we might have to fucking have one tonight. And I'm just like, thinks he's joking because he's that kind of guy. I mean, that would make say that. So I'm like, yeah, fucking sure, Nips. Just let me know. And then he wasn't even joking. He goes, no, I'm dead fucking serious. And I could just see it in his eyes. Like, I know him, and I laugh. And I'm like, okay. This guy used to be my trainer at a gym I used to work out in the summer. Like, 6 years ago, he was my trainer. Like, he worked there. And I was in, like, the group that would pay to train there, and he was one of the fucking trainers. It was so funny. He's much older than me. He's a little smaller than me, But he tells me that. And then he was running around like a clown because he's that kind of player. And, I mean, very entertaining player. But so he absolutely just elbowed my fucking roommate, and not my roommate, my D partner in the head at the time. And, like, it looked pretty bad. And the guy was just like, all right. Like, he wants one, and he's running around like a fucking idiot, like, let's have one. And so we square up, and if you watch the video, it's kind of like a long square up. And then he says to me, like, when I first grabbed him with my left hand, and I think I like kind of grabbed his ear loop of his helmet and his collar too at the same time. So I was kind of like, fuck it, like, I don't care, like, I ain't gonna let go. And I was like, I was confident, I'm like, this guy's not gonna shake me loose. So I was like, if I grab his helmet and his fucking jersey, I'm like, that sucks, like, I can pull him around pretty good then. But then he was like, I was just about to start unloading, and then he goes, wait, let me re-grab. And I'm kind of laughing because, like, I hadn't fought in a while, like, squaring up. I hadn't been in a fight where you square up since fucking junior. So we squared up, and then we grab each other, and then he's like, wait, and I'm laughing. I'm like, because, like, it feels like such slow motion. So I'm, like, kind of in my head, like, laughing kind of to myself, being like, it's so funny how, like, I have even had the time to think about that. And he's like, let me re-grab. And I literally let him, if you can see his arms kind of do this thing, and I let him re-grab my collar to what he thought was where he wanted to hold. I thought that was very polite of myself. And then, like, he didn't say, like, I'm ready. I didn't wait for that. But I let him re-grab a little bit. And then, yeah, I just threw it right. And I got lucky, or I got a hold of him anyways and dropped him pretty good. But, yeah, it was funny. A little bit, you know, it almost sucks that it was your buddy you had to drop. But, yeah, it's the way it went. It was funny.
Yeah, well, there you go. I said, well, this is going to be a big heavyweight champ. Here we go, folks. But, yeah, it was that was something. But, well, man, I know we've talked here for a long time. I don't want to keep you too much longer. But we got to bookend it here. You know, the end of the year comes. You guys actually had a really strong team. You had a good year. And, unfortunately, you lost to Quad City in the first round. How did you expect to go for, I mean, you know what I mean? And, you know, everybody wants to obviously win the championship. That's what we're playing for. But in your mind, did you think you were going to? Like, were you pretty disappointed in the loss to Quad City?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. It was a pretty big heartbreaker for me. Because, well, I mean, we honestly, like, I know a lot of, like you said, a lot of teams say this and they always say this, but, and we only finished in fourth place, but there was a lot. The Spill was really a strong, like, there was a lot of strong teams in the Spill this year. Like, it seems like the Spill is either really top heavy, like there's two teams that just completely run away with it, or one team that's just like so far ahead they'll never be caught. But there was kind of like four teams of us that were all pretty near each other, had played throughout the year and been pretty even, and like, so we get matched with. We got matched with Quad City, and, like, we beat them. We'd only played them twice that year, but we beat them 2 out of 3. So we were pretty confident going in, and then we didn't even play good, I thought, in the first game that we ended up winning in playoffs. I thought we played bad. We won 3-1, and then we go back into Fayetteville, and it's only a three-game series in those first couple rounds in the spill. So we just had to win one game, and we lost two at home. It was pretty disappointing, but we had a fucking good team. Like, we had one guy that was friends with the guy on our team who hadn't played since 2015 or 16 or something. He was, like, 34, and he had been an East Coast guy. And, like, we had, like, he, like, showed up. Like, and his buddy, like, convinced him to come out. He started playing again. He was on our team. We had Brian Moore, who, if anyone knows who that is, he's actually fucking nails. And this was hilarious. He's from Charlotte, which is 2.5 hours from Fayetteville. And, like, he played in the OHL and played in the A, played in the Coast for a long time. Like, and then he had a year, he had a couple years in the Coast where he was, like, point per game with, like, 250 pims or something.
Yep.
And maybe not a couple, but he definitely had one. He was a tough cookie, and I don't think that this would ever have been allowed to fly, especially with my kind of coach that we had, the way he is. But he would play only home games, and he wouldn't practice with us. He would just drive out for home games the day of. It was fucking hilarious, and he's a beauty. Great guy. You should fucking have him on your show. He's hilarious. He'd be unbelievable to have him on the pod. And he's actually tough as shit. He's been in a lot of good fights, but yeah, he would come up and just beat the wheels off guys, and he was really good at the SPHL level. Like, fucking
well, yeah, well. 22 games with you guys. He had 15 goals, 20 assists, and 138 minutes, and he was a plus 19. That's a hell of a guy. Yeah, I think I wouldn't mind. Yeah, you don't need to practice. Don't worry about it. Fuck, yeah. I think I'd go for that deal if I was the coach.
Oh, he was hilarious. Like, he would fight a lot. And, like, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of guys that are, even guys that are crazy, like, they would come probably down to a level like the SBHL and not be as worried much about, like, all the shit that's going on. But he was the kind of guy, like, that fucking really loved. Like, his first game down there, I remember he just beat the fuck out of someone, and I laughed. It was something like a guy, like, lightly two-handed him or something, like, in a battle in the corner, and he, like, took exception to it. And I was like, buddy, like, this was hilarious. It got to the point, it made me laugh. Like, I got in a fight in Pensacola later in the year, because Brian Moore would fight all the time. And then I remember our coach was hilarious, man. Corey Melker, absolutely hilarious coach. He'd always be, he was very, like, animated. And, like, I remember a guy in Pensacola was kind of running around, fucking cheap shots and shit. And he just yelled on the bench, can someone fucking do something that's not fucking Brian? Like, when he said that, that's what made me laugh. He only played home games, but he made it to the Pensacola trip down to Florida somehow. He was able to work that one out. I laughed at that. But so we're down in Pensacola, yeah, and he yells down the bench, someone do something that's not Brian. And then I was like, ah, fuck, okay. So I went and fought. But yeah, he was a good time. Like, but no, we had a lot of good players. We were good. We had an older team. And the thing I didn't like, though, like, we had guys, like, all year. And I mean, I know that this is, some people would say that's how you're supposed to do it and how you're supposed to act. But we had guys that would always be like, oh, are we going to Myrtle Beach after we win? Like, people would be like, when we win, people would talk like that. And I'd be like, fuck, like, don't jinx us. Sure enough, maybe we did. Maybe we didn't. Maybe we did. But yeah, we definitely thought we had a team to go the whole way. So it was disappointing. But the spill is such a shit show. Like, Roanoke fucking made the final and they barely even made playoffs. Like, they were not even 500 of them. So it's just that's one thing about that league. I think there's a stat in the SPHL that, and I think this is how it goes. My coach would always say it, but I believe that a team that has finished first in that league has never won that year.
Yeah. Yeah,
and the teams that finish first are usually finishing like 25 points ahead sometimes. So it's a unique league. It's own beast. Every year's different.
Well, when you wrap up and the season's done and you got to hop in the Dakota and you're driving back home to Ontario, do you know it's over? Like, did you know you weren't playing again?
Yeah, like, so that's, when we did lose in playoffs, like, that was a pretty hard moment. Like, I'll be honest, like, I was on the ice, and, like, I had, like, tears forming in my fucking eyes and shit. And I remember, like, I'm a pretty superstitious, sentimental guy to begin with, but I do, like, I remember skating off being like, fuck, like, picking up the one foot and, like, the other one was still down there, I was like, fuck, you might have just walked off the ice for, like, your last time as, like, an organized high-level player.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I definitely, I mean, part of me is getting, like, you know, you'll always have the itch there, you know, and when we're up in Timmins there, one of our guys we work with, he's the head coach and GM of the Junior A team up there. I skated with them the other day and felt good. You know, it always makes you want to play, but I would play. I think I'm just going to maybe join the senior ranks. And I always say to myself as a joke to, like, tell my mind to shut up. I'm like, just go make enough money that maybe you could go back to the school in a year and a half and play it out for another 10.
Red Mile Roofing might lead to you. You might be kept back down to Fayetteville once Red Mile takes off.
Yeah, maybe. That's what I said. I'll just have to make an American company and just do roofs down there.
Yeah, there you go. Well, down Fayetteville, if they're like, hey, you can get a Fayetteville marksman to come do your roof, the Booster Club might be all over that. You might have stumbled onto something.
Oh, seriously. Like, I had a buddy, the guy that I do roofs with, he was about to go down to Huntsville and do something just like that. He was going to be like the, get your roof done by Huntsville Havoc.
Yeah. You know, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's what it's going to be. Hey, I would go, but better make a call or two to the girlfriend, probably run that one by her. Yeah, so, I had a good run, but I'm honestly, like, I'm ready to try. You know, like, I'm very fortunate to play hockey as long as I have, and I know I've said that, but, you know, I think there's other things that I'm better at. And I do have a lot, I'm thankful to have a lot of other interests besides hockey. I think that's one thing I worry about a lot of guys I do play with. I just find, like, some guys don't get into too much other than hockey, and then, fuck, man, like, you know, you're almost 30 years old and you've done nothing your whole life but play hockey. That's when I worry about guys when they, like, stop playing, because it's like, that's when some guys, you know, start to go nuts and shit like that. You know, they've played their whole life. It's something that a lot of people don't try and think of, but yeah, so I'm in that weird transition period right now. It feels pretty weird being September and I'm not, like, got the anxiety that I'm in shape.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, packing up, calling the boys, getting all fired up to play. But yeah, no, I think it's my time, because even there were some times last year it might be, like, I love playing still, but one thing I was starting to hate, and I noticed this even, like, my last maybe 3 or 4 years, is I'd almost start to wish that games were at, like, 11 a.m. because, like, a 7 p.m. game, like, fuck, you got to wake up, you go to the rink, probably go on the ice. I would always skate just to kill time. And then you go home, have your shower, your food, your nap, and it's like all the waiting around. And then on the road, when you don't even have, like, at least your own house or truck, like, you can go buzz around and do some stuff, go grocery shopping, keep your mind off it. Like, you just sit in a hotel room all day till 7 p.m. Like, fucking just kill me now. Like, that was starting to get hard in my head. I was not loving that. And then fucking, you know, you'd be laying around and you'd be like, shit, like, should I be playing? Or, like, would I rather be home right now, like, you know, with the family and friends, you know? So,
well, that's the thing, right? Like you said, when you play so much, like, I've heard you talk about it on the project and stuff, all those years, like, a junior and you're out in the East Coast playing with the Maritimes and stuff, you missed everything. Right? Like, you missed Christmas. Mm-hmm. You missed all that stuff, or birthdays, or, you know, oh, buddy just did this and you're not there, but they're sending you, like, you know, the pictures or something. And it's like, yeah, I mean, that's tough, you know? And it's like, and I think people forget that part too, what you guys go through, you know, like, you miss stuff. Well, like you said, no, a girlfriend back in Canada, you know, it's just like, yeah, the phone calls get a little old after a while, you know, you got to come home.
Well, that was a thing, too, and I mean, like, it was hard, too, because where I was at in Ontario, I didn't have brutal winters or everything, but, like, my girlfriend certainly wasn't loving it when I try and FaceTime her at, like, 11 o'clock every day, because I'm already home from the rink, because we had decently early practices, and I got a towel around my neck trying to walk to the pool, and she's slinging at her desk job. She used to always just grill me for that. She's like, stop calling me when you're going out and having all this fun, and I have to sit here and work.
Yeah.
But I used to try to get it done. But yeah, it is a definite sacrifice that now, like, kind of looking back at it, being 28 now, and, you know, I'm not Patrick Marleau or anything like that, but I, you know, played for a long time, and I left home, like, I was basically only home for half of my 12th grade year, So, you know, it's over a decade basically that I've been gone, and you know, like you're in group chats with all your friends you grew up with from home, and I mean, this might be a little bit before your time, but you know, people always send in the memories from Snapchats and all this bullshit, and you're in these groups with all your friends, and you're like, holy fuck, like this is memories from 6, 7, 8 years ago. I'm like, wasn't there for any of that. Like, that's fucking getting to be a while ago. And I was like, I'm on the go too long. And if I was playing at a level that I was supporting myself better financially, it'd be more worth it. But you love the game as much as you love it, but you can't be making all these sacrifices if you kind of are putting yourself behind in the real world to a degree.
Yeah, unless you have something set up or whatever. Yeah, you're going to get a fucking rude awakening at 28, 29, 30, right? And yeah, so you definitely have to be setting stuff up or have something to go to, or else the transition might not be, because it has not for everybody, but it might be bad. It could, well, and it has, like you said, you hear some real sad stories too, and that, because guys weren't ready, and it's just, and that's all they know. So yeah, it could be tough for sure. But anyway, man, that I know we've gone a long time. I want to thank you for coming back on the show. And I certainly hope it's not the last time. We'll get you back on. I'm sure you and I have had some unique text conversations, so I think we could do it again on the podcast. But I know you're heading back. You're back to Alberta here soon. You're moving, and you're going to start, what is it, the Red Mile Roofing Company. So everybody in Calgary, I know a shingle guy. Yep. I know a roof guy.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so moving back out west, it's middle of September now. I'm looking to be in there middle of October to November. Just got incorporated this week. So if you need any of your roofing needs in the central southern Alberta region, you call me, Red Mile Roofing Limited, baby. We'll hook you up with the boys up top with the hot box getting shit done. You know what I mean?
I love it.
Yeah, no, it'll be good, yeah. But anytime you need a guest ever, I know we've talked about how hard it is sometimes to corral guests. If you ever need anyone, you text me last minute or something even. I love the way you do it. I can just answer the phone anywhere. So you ever need a guy, I'm your man. And, yeah, I have to get you back on the project too, because same thing for myself. I'm not the best at wrangling down guests, but I appreciate you having me on. I know we went on a lot longer than I think you and I even expected. So I just appreciate getting the chance to be back on this, this modern folklore of a show.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, pretend radio. I think we did a pretty good. I think the people enjoyed the episode. And yeah, if you need me to come back on the project, we can talk about Dave Brown. Harrison was learning about Dave Brown this week. So, oh, you young kids. Oh, you youngsters. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's funny. That is one name, though, before we go here, I credit so many names and stories, and like, I've loved watching fights, but you guys put me on to so many names that, as a guy that like to think hockey trivia wise for my age, especially now, you know, it's not even that cool now because you can just elite prospects everything. I couldn't remember a single note I ever read in school, but if I look at some guy's hockey card or elite prospects, I'll never forget it.
Yeah.
So you bringing up all these names I never fucking heard of, or, you know, I remember stars from the 70s and stuff, but the enforcers from back then weren't getting as much, favor, even guys into the 90s and the early 2000s. So found out so many guys. But, yeah, Dave Brown, possibly one of the toughest guys of them all. I didn't even know who the fuck that was. And honestly, I credit it to you and Alec over at Five for Fighting and his Facebook group, to guys like you guys for keeping these communities alive. And I just find it's just so fascinating to me that such a niche little thing that we spend our time talking to about on shows like this, but it's so fascinating. I can't believe that more people aren't into it, because I'm like, pretty cool shit, man. Like, I hope that we get more documentaries like Ice Guardians and people with money and the talent to produce good content getting called stories, or it's going to be up to guys like you and I to branch free from the podcasting and start making these documentaries on these awesome stories, because there's so much out there.
Oh, and like we were saying, right, I think with the, you could go into so much. Like, you get these guys to sit down and talk about the mental side of it and everything. I think it could really open up people's eyes and what's going on. But the only thing that bugs me that you weren't back in Western Canada for I would have loved to have gone to Ice Wars with you at Edmonton.
Yeah. Now, is there work? Will they be doing another one, do you think? Because I think never met you in person, which I find is fucking hilarious, because I feel like I kind of know you after being on multiple pod episodes and some phone calls, a lot of texts and Twitter exchanges. I feel like I know you, but I was thinking that too. I was like, fuck, I wish I was there for the second one. Hopefully there's a third. Hopefully AJ Galante listens to this and gets Ice Wars 3 going up, because I would make the trip up to Edmonton to see that for sure. So hopefully there's something like that going on that we'll get the chance to partake in an activity like that in person. That'd be unreal.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I know they're doing a third one for sure. It's just there's a debate about where it's going to be. I've heard Florida. So we'll see. But I said, selfishly, I hope it's back in Edmonton, because I know a bunch of guys that are going to come to it. So, yeah, that'll be cool. But anyway, man, I'll let you go for the night. I know we talked for a long time, but we'll stay in touch, and I appreciate you coming on tonight.
Okay. Well, thank you so much again. Thank you to all your listeners and everything like that. Feel free to check out the project. And, Darren, thanks again. I know we'll be talking soon.
Absolutely, man. Take it easy.
And you people that don't like fighting, how many of you did you walk out and get a coffee while that was on?